Department of Police and the Secretary will join us at 10. So over to the researchers just to take us through the briefing, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning and good morning, Honourable Members. I'm just quickly going to take the committee through the findings of the Auditor General on the use of consultants. The performance audit on the use of consultants was conducted on 8 national government departments and covered 124 contracts with an estimated value of 5.5 billion rand. The audit covered a 3-year period from 2008-09 to 2010-11. The audit report found that 74% of the national expenditure of government, which is about 33.5 billion, was spent on consultants during the period under review. Now, the performance audit focused on 6 specific areas, namely planning and appointment processes. Secondly, the internal capacity, meaning that they looked at where staff was doubled up, where capacity existed, but still the departments used consultants. Thirdly, they looked at training and skill transfer from consultants to employees. They also looked at performance management and monitoring of consultants, also the extension of contracts, and finally the closing and finalization of contracts. The Auditor General found that the police spent about 4.039 billion rand on consultants during the 3-year period under review. The Auditor General audited 9 contracts to the value of 596 million rand, and it's about 14% of the total amount that was spent of 4.039 billion. The Auditor General reported on 4 main contracts of the department. The first one was the development and maintenance of a firearm control system to the cost of 412.5 million rand. Secondly, the refurbishment of 200 Miata vehicles to the cost of 176.7 million rand. Thirdly, adult basic education and training, or ABET, to the cost of 11.7 million. And finally, they reported on the internal audit service to the cost of 87.2 million rand. Deficiencies were found on the following: planning and appointment. 3 main categories of deficiencies were found. It was on planning and appointment, performance management and monitoring, and the closing and finalization of projects. We've developed some questions that the committee could ask the Auditor General. It will be interesting to know on what basis were the departments chosen for the performance audit, as well as on what basis the 9 contracts in the Department of Police was chosen. Secondly, whether the Auditor General can disclose the names of 5 contracts audited but not mentioned in the report. Members should remember that 9 contracts were audited and they reported on only 4 of those 9. So it would be interesting to know what the other 5 contracts were. Then also whether or not the AG can actually tell the committee what the findings were on the other 5 contracts, which was not mentioned in the report, and actually why they only published the findings of these 4 contracts. And also the 9 contracts audited constitute a very small percentage of the total amount spent on contracts by the department. It's about only 14% of the total amount, and the AG should explain why contracts to such a small monetary amount was audited. If we look at those specific projects under review, we can start with the development and maintenance of a firearms control system. The total contract cost was 412.5 million rand. And the following are the key findings made on the contract. The department's supply chain management function for information and communication technology, acquisition was outsourced to SICA. The SICA recommended that the tender be awarded at a cost of 102 million rand for the core solution. The contract was signed on 30 September 2004 for an amount of about 92.8 million for the core solution. However, the head of the information and systems management as the delegated officer signed four addendums that gave rise to a total contract price of 412.5 million rand, and this is about a 350% increase on the original contract cost. Now, as of March 2012, the department has paid the consultant 341.6 million rand for contracted items. But the firearm control system was still not complete 17 months after the system was to be handed over to the department on 5 July 2006. According to the completion plan submitted by the consultant, on 7 September 2012, an estimated 80% of the core solution was completed. However, the contract has been since placed on hold in August 2012, pending an internal investigation. The contract also forms part of a special of an investigation of the FIU, and the department also did not include a skills development plan in the contract, even though the request for tender required the service provided transfer skills to SITA staff. This resulted in SITA resources not being adequately equipped to maintain the system after its development and implementation. The Select Committee on Public Accounts met with all the 8 departments on the 26th of February, on February this year, and a couple of issues were mentioned by the members of the SCOPA committee. And they mentioned that no project management, and that there were no project management and deadlines missed without any sanctions being handed down to the contractor. The use of addendums was a reflection of poor planning on the contract. The contractors have stated that the project is 80% complete, but the fact have approached expert in the sector to assist in evaluating the status of the completion of the project. Also, since the contract was placed on hold, the services of Waymar has been terminated based on a legal opinion. Waymar is, however, disputing the legality of this termination, and FAPS is waiting for a second legal opinion on this matter. The committee could ask the department the following questions. The SAP should provide a list of all contracts or projects where Waymark is involved and the value of these contracts. The committee could look at whether similar problems have been identified in other projects where this company is contracted. Secondly, when will the assessment of percentage completion of the project be finalized? The results of the assessment should be forwarded to the portfolio committee. If the project is assessed to be further from completion than inferred by Waymark, for instance, less than 80% complete, the committee must establish what the implications of this is. Thirdly, what is the way forward to completion of the outstanding system of the project and the time frames in this regard? Hopefully the committee could ask the department to provide continuous updates on the status of Waymark's challenge to the termination of the contract, and that the department should provide the results of the FIU investigation report. It is expected that this report is finished by the end of May this year, and the department should forward the findings to the portfolio committee. If we look at the second contract on the refurbishment of 200 Niala vehicles, this contract, the total contract cost was 176.7 million rand, and the AG found the following key problems. In February 2008, the department identified 200 vehicles to be refurbished before the end of February 2010 to be used during the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Two consultants were appointed at an estimated cost of 79.5 million rand. The first contractor was allocated 160 vehicles to the estimated cost of 61.2 million rand. And the second consultant was allocated 14 vehicles at an estimated cost of 18.2 million rand. However, the department severely underestimated the cost of the contract during the need assessment, and payments to the estimated value of 176.7 million rand was made to this refurbishment. And this is a 122% increase and higher cost than the original estimated contract value of 79.5 million. The project deliverables was not met, and 22% of the refurbished Niala vehicles were delivered off the contract delivery date. That is to say that most of the vehicles were actually delivered after the World Cup. During the SCOPA meeting, the following issues were raised. The fact that the Niala vehicles were imported was raised as an issue, and stated that the SAPs did not understand the vehicles, and that they decided to not to replace any other vehicles, but to actually refurbish it, as the cost would have been between 5 and 6 million rand per vehicle. And then Neonis was needed, were needed for the FIFA World Cup, and also to deal with escalating public unrest. And certainly in the SCOPA meeting, the department noted that one of the reasons that the SAPS was reluctant to penalize the contractor for late delivery of vehicles was because the SAPS themselves were late in delivering the vehicles to the contractors for them to complete the repairs. The department further noted that mandatory maintenance is a compliance challenge with the department, and that they are looking at a management turnaround strategy to address the problem with respect not only to the Niala vehicles, but to the entire vehicle fleet as a whole. And the department further stated that the AVL system has the software to notify the department on due dates for services, and so it will indicate about 500 kilometers before the service is needed that a service is coming up. And the National Commissioner stated that the SAPs are currently investigating the purchase of new vehicles for public order policing. And the committee could probe the following issues. SCOPA did not probe into the way forward for SAPs, identifying that as a responsibility of the Portfolio Committee on Police. The Portfolio Committee should thus probe the details on the turnaround strategy for vehicle maintenance, Niala vehicles and others, and whether the AVL software, specifically the function alerting the need for service maintenance, currently being implemented on all the Niala vehicles and all other vehicles. Secondly, the department should provide details on the research that has been completed around the purchasing of new vehicles for public order policing. And the department should provide a rationale for this need in light of the decision made a few years ago that it will be preferable to repair rather than purchase new vehicles. And the department could indicate what type of new vehicles will be purchased for public order policing and what the cost of these vehicles will be. If we look at the ABET, Adult Basic Education and Training, the total contract cost was 11.7 million rand, and the AG found the following key challenges. The department appointed a consultant on 18 October 2006 to provide services on the ABIS for departmental staff at an average cost of 3,435 rand per learner over 3 years. However, the contract was ceded to another consultant on 7 September, shortly after that, in the same year, after a payment of 1.4 million was made to that consultant. Now, the discrepancies in the interpretation of the contract...
Sorry, can you just clarify that? Because the date is 18 October, and then you said shortly afterwards, but that date is prior to it, 7 September.
I'm sorry, Jefferson. I'll just make sure of that date. Discrepancies in the interpretation of the contract... which led to the ceding of the contract by the main bidder, which was Deloitte and Touche, to a smaller subsidiary to the main bid, which was Project Literacy. Now, Project Literacy had actually intended for the initial bid as a sole bidder, but had been disqualified as not meeting the bid specifications and special conditions. Which the committee members can see is a problem because they didn't qualify originally, but the contract was given to them by Deloitte and Touche. The terms of the contract were amended without a written agreement to a third contractor, which was the Tutor Adult Center. The issue that was raised during the SCOFA meeting was the role players and the discrepancies in the contract. Consultant C, which was Deloitte and Touche, was appointed in 2006. And now their bid was submitted as a consortium with Consultant D, which was Project Literacy, to which they subcontracted some of the work. Project Literacy has also bid for the contract on its own and not as part of the consortium, but has been unsuccessful. The delivery was meant to include electronic delivery to 9 provinces, but Deloitte and Touche interpreted the contract as to have specified 9 sites rather than a number of sites in all 9 provinces, and had asked for additional money to complete that function. The SAT refused to give them more money, and they thus pulled out the contract, leaving Project Literacy to deliver. A few months later, the bid needed to be re-advertised for the next year, and Project Literacy were not successful in this bid. The contract was subsequently awarded to the Tutor Adult Center. Payments to Adult Tutor Center, appointed in November 2008, and it was thus agreed without a written document that the period November 2008 to March 2009 would be considered the first year which after the normal financial year would apply, which is really strange. Then the committee could consider probing the following issues. SCOPA did not deal with the problem that after Deloitte and Touche pulled out of the contract, Project Literacy landed up with the initial contract. And they've surveyed for a short period, even though they had not been successful for the bid when they had applied on their own. It should be considered whether the department was concerned about this issue and why this contract fell into the hands of someone who was not successful. The committee could also probe whether measures are in place to ensure going forward that ceding of a contract when a consortium wins a contract does not result in this kind of scenario. Secondly, the committee could probe how such a serious misinterpretation of contract can arise with serious financial implications, like the delivery in 9 sites versus the delivery in numerous sites in 9 provinces. Thirdly, the committee could probe what the current status of the project is and what measures are in place to address the problem identified by the agency to ensure that they do not rise again, including an unsuccessful sale bid but a landing up of the contract. Discrepancies in understanding of the contract deliverables and the lack of written documentation on contract changes. The last contract that was reported on by the AG is the internal audit service to the value of 87.2 million rand. The department closed the internal audit function and appointed a consultant, which was KPMG, on 4 December 2002 for a period of 3 years at a cost of 29.3 million rand. The contract cost increased by 17.2 million rand due to extensions. The consultant was appointed on 19 April 2007 again at a cost of 33.5 million rand and was extended at a cost of 6.7 million rand. However, the total payments over the duration of the two contracts amounted to 77 million rand instead of the contracted 87 million rand, which was about 10 million rand less than the original contract price. Now, throughout the duration of these contracts, a severe lack of resources for the consultants and auditors were experienced. This was especially pertaining to the lack of laptop computers. In the SCOPA meeting, the following issues were addressed. The SAP co-sourced with the view to the eventual transfer of skills. It took a while before the unit was ready to begin functioning without these consultants. But while there were some training and transfer of skills, it was inadequate. The lack of laptops to the consultant auditors arose due to the lengthy procurement process within the department. Also, the current status of the internal audit. The internal audit is now formed as an independent internal function without the use of consultants, and there is a staff of 204 internal auditors currently in the department. The committee could ask the department the following: to provide an overview of staffing, expertise and resources of the internal audit unit, and whether the unit is now able to fulfill its legislative function effectively, and also why was the total payment over the duration of the two contracts 10 million rand less than the contracted amount. If we look at gaps in the report, the committee are currently aware of many more contracts that have serious challenges, some of which speak in all the IJF projects, including E-Docket and the TETRA project. The portfolio committee should explore the interrelationship and broader contract management concerns of the department. The committee should also further probe measures that have now been taken to improve contract management in general within the department. The committee could also probe the issue of expenditure growth in contractors, further to ensure that expenditure growth in this area is indeed limited to the supplementing of skills where these do not exist within the department, and further, where it is not desirable that staff fulfill these functions themselves. The committee needs to probe further the desire and capability of staff to raise control of these projects over from CETA and manage these IT projects more effectively. How sure is staff that it can fulfill this function more effectively, and what measures have it put in place to ensure that this can indeed occur? In conclusion, the portfolio committee has been long aware that the department enters into contracts that is not beneficial to the department. And the committee has also noted that the department's supply chain management division is not supported adequately by the department's legal services division. The lack of support leads directly to the department entering into contracts which doesn't have the best interests of the department at heart. The committee recommended during the budget review and recommendation process last year that urgent attention should be given to supply chain management, particularly the increase of internal controls within the environment in order to better manage both movable and immovable assets of the department. The commitment made by the department during this process towards the restructuring of the department, especially in supply chain management and legal services, was welcomed by the committee, and the National Commissioner is expected to report back to the committee on that as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nicolette, for that. Members, that's the briefing from the committee researchers. I do not think it's necessary for us to ask questions now. We're going to get a briefing from the Auditor General. Lobby, can I ask that you just open and see whether they're there so that they can come in, please? Can I just, before I give you an opportunity, Mr. George, what will happen is that the Auditor General will make a presentation. I've asked that the police then tell us how they're going to correct the situation, what steps they've taken, and also with the Civilian Secretariat to indicate to the committee what they are doing as this civilian oversight body to make sure that these kinds of things do not happen again. Mr. George?
Madam Chair, I was not going to ask a question, but I was going to ask the researcher if it is possible for her just to get us how many illiterate police are there now. You see, some years ago, the number of illiterate police who cannot read and write was going down. From 1996, the appointments of police was that you must have matric, which to me would give that by now there should be a very small number of police who are still completely illiterate. I'm asking this because of this huge amount which are still paid and unable.
The committee researchers can do that, but the committee is also welcome to ask that question to the department when they are here today on that. Mr. Lobby, can you give me an indication? Are they here? They can come in, please. They can come in. Is the secretary here and such? They can all come in, please. Members, let's break for 5 minutes, let them set up, have a 5 minute break, and then we can start.
I don't know. Who's that? Young man? I'm fine, with that.
Right.
What
Okay.
Can I ask that everybody take their seats so that we can start? We're going to start in the following way. First of all, we're going to take the presentation from the Auditor General's office. Then we're going to allow the Secretariat of Police to give us an indication of what they are going to do to ensure that there are better control as part of the civilian oversight and their responsibility, and then we are going to give SAPS an opportunity to do so as well, to tell us what they have done and what they are doing going forward to make sure that these kinds of things does not repeat itself. Members, before we start the meeting regarding the Auditor General's office, members would be aware most properly that in the last 24 hours we had the killing of two police officers, one a Metro police officer in Gauteng, another one in Philippi yesterday afternoon, an off-duty police officer. And we condemn these killings in the strongest possible terms, as much as we do any action by police that is not within the confines of the law. The second issue that I want to raise with members while we are here, I'm just worried all members are not here yet, so I'm going to give an opportunity for them just to settle. Members, while we wait for the other members to come in and for me to continue on that point, can I indicate to members that next week we will be going for our strategic planning session. We will leave Parliament the moment we're done with the briefings from COPRU, SAPU, ISS, etc. on the budget of the police on Tuesday. We will leave. We're going to Monkey Valley Lodge in Noordhoek. We will spend two evenings there. And on the second day will be closed briefing sessions by the Commissioner, Secretary of Police, as well as the Acting Executive Director. First evening we will be going through briefings by the Research Unit of Parliament in terms of the budgets, the APPs, etc., so that we are prepared when we get back to deal with those budgets. And then the third day we will finish by 11 o'clock at the latest on the Thursday, so that we then can agree on our program for the rest of the year. Members, I've also received a letter dated 14th March. It reads as follows: Honourable A. van Wyk, MP, Acting Chairperson, Portfolio Committee on Police, Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, Cape Town, whatever. Dear Acting Chairperson, request to brief the Portfolio Committee. I would like to request that you provide me with the opportunity to brief the Portfolio Committee on what I believe is a matter of serious importance. The matter relates to the current perceptions and negative publicity regarding the actions of certain members of the South African Police Service. Knowing the importance of this matter, I would request to be given the opportunity to, as soon as possible, appear before and engage with the committee. I would appreciate it if you could assist in facilitating this request. Kind regards, Minister E.N. Tweta, Minister of Police, date 14 March 2013. Members, I think we are all equally concerned about this matter, and I therefore have indicated to the Minister's office that next week, Tuesday, at 9:30, we will give the Minister an opportunity to engage with the committee around the issues that he's raised here, the issues that the committee has raised over the past few weeks as well. Immediately after our engagement with him, we will then continue with the briefings from the trade unions, the ISS, and the other people that we've invited around the budget, and immediately after we finish, we will leave for the strategy meeting. So if members are in agreement for that briefing, can I just get an indication so that I can see Mr. George?
Like I said that day, this to us is a very, very great sacrifice. That week, as far as some of us are concerned, I'm saying that way to us is a sacrifice. But now at least you understood when it was going to Wednesday. But if now goes to Thursday, you must understand that is the Holy Week.
I'm not opening the discussion on the program. We have agreed to that program. Members who can't be there on the first day will indicate so, and they will not be there. Our program has been, it's a working week for Parliament, and we have permission from the chair of chairs to continue with what is an important planning session. I'm not opening, I just want to have somebody indicating to me whether I can go ahead inviting the minister for next week. Mr. Groenewald, Mr. Ndlovu.
I shall propose, Chairperson, that we can continue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Groenewald. Mr. Ndlovu?
I think, Chairperson, it will suffice if you brief us on Tuesday before we leave for the workshop, because it has to be done. If it was possible to do it this week, but we can't do it this week, because this thing has taken a long time to be done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. It's been so agreed. Ms. Molabati?
Chairperson, we agree.
Thank you very much. And over to the Auditor General's office. Can you introduce your team, and then you can go ahead, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable members, good morning. My name is Naeem Sidat. I'm an executive in the Office of the Auditor General, responsible for all specialized audits, including all the performance audits that the office puts out. I'll be giving you the presentation this morning, assisted by my colleague, Krishna Jan van Rensburg, to my left, and Connie Myberg, to the left, who's the business executive responsible for regularity audit in the Office of the AG. Chairperson, we have the presentation up on the screen, and we've distributed copies of that already to the members. Along with the presentation that was handed out, we have also distributed a copy of a report from one of our SIs that we work closely with in the United Kingdom, the National Audit Office. It was a report, an executive summary of a report that they did on the use of consultants in the UK, which is very similar to the report that we have put out. And we thought that for the members' consumption, it would be useful to look at some of the parallels between the work that we've done here in South Africa and the work that is being done globally. Of interest to the members will be the note that many of the issues that we have picked up were found in the UK as well during their performance audit. So it points to some of the universality of some of the problems and the issues that are inherent in the use of consultants. Chairperson, in terms of the presentation this morning, we will just spend a bit of time just giving you a brief outline into the background of the audit, and then talking a little bit about some of the transversal issues that we found, and then how these relate specifically to the department. My colleague will then take us through some of the details related to specific contracts, and we'll round off with some of the recommendations that we have already made to the department. Chair, at the outset, I think it's important for the members reflect on the difference between the performance audit as has been tabled by the office and the normal regularity audit that we normally do. And I'll spend some time just talking about some of the key differences between those two on the next slide. So at a glance, why did we conduct this performance audit in the use of consultants by government? There were a number of reasons for that, the first being that the use of consultants or consulting expenditure as a line item in the income statement of the state, per se, is significant. It's significant expenditure for the period in the review from 2008-09 to 2011. We spent a total of 102 billion over 3 years, so it represents a significant expenditure and one that is worth examining more closely. We also acknowledge that South Africa does indeed have a skills crisis, and so we truly have a need for these kinds of services and to acquire certain skill sets from the private sector. And that brings us to the next one. We as the office acknowledge that the relationship between the private sector and the public sector is one of national importance. And that doesn't really just apply to us here in South Africa, but it's a dynamic and a relationship that plays out around the world. All states rely on the private sector to acquire certain skill sets that are not cost effective for it to develop itself. And so we are certainly in this report not advocating the termination of this relationship. We are not advocating the termination of the use of consultants. However, the manner in which we use them must bring value for money. When we use consultants, it must be done in an economical, efficient, and effective manner. So we truly feel the public sector can benefit, provided the consultants are used in the correct manner. Chair, honorable members, we also conducted similar audits in 1996 and 2002. So similar performance audits were conducted by the office back then, and I must say that many of the findings echo or mirror some of the key root issues that we have again reported in this report. So it's nothing new in terms of the subject matter, in terms of the need to exercise control over the use of consultants. It's a message the office has put out before, and we continue to do so in our regularity audits that we do on an annual basis. Chair, as I said, I'll just take a minute just to reflect on the difference between this performance audit and the work that we as an office put out every year. The difference between a performance audit and the regularity auditing. Regularity auditing focuses on the finances, its financial management, whether these financial statements are true and fair, and the compliance with laws and regulations. So this audit, a performance audit, does not duplicate what the financial audit does or what the regularity audit does. Yes, there are touch points and overlaps. However, this audit was a focus on what we call the three E's, and the three E's being economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. Economy, are we buying things at the right price, at the right time, at the right quality? It talks about the money and monetary aspects of our transactions. Efficiency, is there an optimal relationship between the inputs and the outputs? So are we achieving more with less? Is the easy way to understand that concept. And effectiveness, do we achieve what we set out to achieve? Do we meet the objectives we set out to achieve when we embark on any of these consulting projects? So it's with that in mind that we embarked on this audit of the use of consultants. Getting into the audit itself now, looking at the scope and the departments we audited and why others were not audited, you will appreciate as well that auditing is by its nature a sample technique. We don't audit the entire population of departments. We use many criteria to select a sample of departments that we then audited. So the sample that we selected, this is the population. You'll see the breakdown of that 102 billion over 3 years has been split between national and provincial expenditure. The national expenditure represents 33.5 billion rand over 3 years. The blue bit on the top right. The green bit is the provincial expenditure, which represents 68.5 billion rand over the 3 year period. The subject of the report that we've now tabled concerns the blue bit, the national expenditure. Similar reports to this report are being prepped at the moment and will be released for the provincial side of things very shortly. In terms of the departments that were audited and why others were not audited, the subject of this audit involved 8 national departments, a total expenditure of consultants by those 8 national departments of 24.6 billion rand over 3 years. Those 8 national departments account for roughly 74% of the total spend nationally on consultants. So if one had to look at it in terms of what was the best bang for buck in terms of an audit, taking these 8 departments allowed us to cover the majority of the spend. Our selection of the 8 departments is also guided by the outcomes of our regularity audit work. So the issues that we're picking up through our regularity audits and other assessments that we've conducted, for example, the previous performance audits and other performance audits that we were doing. Chairperson, honorable members, on the next slide, we've just represented the focus areas, and it's important to keep these in mind as you go through the findings and as we report on the departmental specific findings. These audit focus areas, if you look at it, become very useful in that they represent almost a life cycle for the use of consultants by an entity. It starts off with the planning and appointment process, It then looks at issues of capacity and whether capacity is used, firstly, A, as a reason for getting consultants, or B, whether the capacity becomes problematic in terms of using the consultants when they actually come on board. We looked at aspects of training and transfer of skills from the consultant to the employees of the department, and importantly, performance management and monitoring of the consultants when they are in your environment. The extension of contracts and then the closing and finalizing of projects closes out this life cycle in terms of our examination. Honourable members, on the next page, we're just reflecting here to give you a sense of what issues were transversal in nature, and this will help you when you look at the department's issues and compare them to the rest of the audited departments in terms of seeing that there is a correlation, that these are issues that are not just plaguing the department, but we find them in other areas of the state as well. In terms of planning an appointment, many of the issues related to comprehensive needs assessment, competitive procurement processes not being followed, and importantly, not setting milestones, timelines, and costs upfront. And this is important because planning upfront, if done correctly, will help you reduce, if not eliminate, many of the issues that follow later on in the life cycle. Extension of contracts, for example, one can often trace back to planning that is not as robust as it should have been. Internal capacity, we often found instances where consultants were appointed where permanent capacity could have been created. So instead of hiring our own staff, we went and used a consultant. Or we also found instances where the consultant was appointed because we didn't have our own staff. And this becomes a bit of a chicken and egg situation because in many cases, they are negatively self-reinforcing. If you have to appoint a consultant because you don't have staff and you bring the consultant in, you find then that you cannot create the capacity because the consultants have entrenched themselves and embedded themselves in the organization. So this becomes a very important area for us to pay attention to. Training and transfer of skills we often found was ineffective. Despite them being written into contracts, in many cases the consultants never transferred skills to the department, either because they didn't do it or because, again, the capacity issues, there was nobody there for them to transfer the skill to. In terms of performance management and monitoring, effective oversight and internal controls were not in place and being robustly executed. Proper project management and cost overruns were not motivated. And members, honorable members, I'm just skimming through these because this is not the subject of today's presentation. We will cover these in a bit more detail as they relate specifically to police. Extension of contracts and importantly in terms of the closing and finalizing, not retrospectively analyzing projects. So even in cases where we've made a mistake, and one acknowledges that in the normal course of business, many projects are not successful. And this is, this happens even in the most well-run organizations, be they in the public and private sector. However, learning from those is an important discipline and one that needs to be enforced. Chair, this brings us to the department specific issues, and I'm going to ask my colleague Krishna to walk us through some of the details as they relate to specific contracts and as they relate to individual aspects of the focus areas that we've talked about before. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm going to take you through the detailed findings in respect of the Department of Police. I think firstly on the first slide you see this overview of the Department of Police, and it's evident that the total expenditure on the consultants from 2008-9 up until 2010-11 added up to 4.839 billion rand. We audited 9 contracts during our audit to the value of 596 million rand. And the committee said, please just take note that that was the best estimate of the contracts for us. The graph below that is giving you now an exact allocation of how this 4.039 million was made up when it has been divided into, firstly, the blue one is agency and support outsourced services. It's showing you the fluctuation over the 3 financial years. And then the red one focusing on consultants. and the green one on the use of contractors within the Department of Police. If we move over to the next slide, this is giving you a holistic view of the specific audit that we conducted at the Department of Police. You will see there we listed all 9 of the contractors or the consultants that we audited to the left. We stipulated exactly what was the project name as well as who the consultant was. We're providing the best available value of the contract and the period of the contractual service. Then from there on, you will see the first thing is we classified the specific consultant that we audited just to make it clear for the committee exactly whether that consultant is a peer consultant or whether it is an outsourced services or whether it is a contractor in this regard. Then if you remember what Naeem indicated to you in terms of the focus areas, we link the specific deficiencies to the six different focus areas, being planning and appointment, the internal capacity, training and transfer of skills, performance management and monitoring, extension of contracts, and then the closing and finalization of projects. The last 3 columns, we just indicated which E has been affected by the specific deficiencies that we found. It should, however, be taken note of that whereas, for instance, fit the economy, it does not mean that the total project was not economically procured. What we are saying is the deficiency that we found related to that specific E at the end of the day. I'm going to take you through one of the examples so that you can just get a feel on how the specific table is working. If we have a look at the first one, it's the development and maintenance of a firearm control system, Waymark Infotech. The base of available value of the contract is 412.5 million rand. The contract period was from September 2004 up until August 2012. We identified or classified the specific consultant to be a consultant. The areas where we found some deficiencies included the training and transfer of skills, performance management and monitoring, and extension of contracts. And these specific deficiencies linked or affected the efficiency and effectiveness ease. Okay. If we can move on, I'm just going to quickly highlight the UC that contract 8 and 9, no material findings were found and thus are not included in the specific public report. On the next slide, we provide for the variations that we found on the specific 9 contracts that we audited. You will see there were 4 variations. When we speak about variations, it includes both extensions and expansions to a specific contract. In other words, if a contract has been set in the beginning and the contracted value as well as the qualities or the functionalities has been concluded, something was added, whether it's time or whether it was an additional deliverable at the end of the day. The first one is development and maintenance of a firearm control system, where the original contract value for the core solution was 92.8 million rand, a variation amount of 319.7 million rand, and in terms of compliance with the procurement policy, that was approved in terms of that. The second one focused on the refurbishment of the Nyalas, where we had an original estimated amount of 79.5 million rand, and the escalation with that cost was from 79 million to 176.7 million rand between the 2 different contractors. Whether it was complied with the procurement policy, we indicated that they did not comply with the procurement policy, as the Bid Adjudication Committee indicated that the contract value was only an estimation and not fixed. Then both of the contracts on the internal audit side, focusing on ALA Consortium, both contracts had an extension or expansion, and both extension and expansion was approved in terms of the procurement policy by the Bid Adjudication Committee. So taking into account all these backgrounds, let's move into the specifics of the contracts that we audited. You will see on the spreadsheet there is some blocks here to the right bottom that's been color-coded. So those specific color coding is used to focus the attention on the action for the level of scrutiny that's recommended by the AG to the portfolio committee to assist with the monitoring. And you'll see the green one, intense scrutiny of strategic plans and accountability reports. The pink one, activities should be monitored quarterly. And then the purple one, follow up on corrective action against the action plans. So taking that into account, you will see that when we highlight the specific deficiencies, that specific deficiencies is also being color-coded, and that is where we see the role of the portfolio committee in assisting with the monitoring. The first one, in terms of development and maintenance of a firearm control system, the department appointed Weimark Infotech. The total contract value at the end, work extensions included, amounted to 412.5 million rand, and the contract period was from September 2004 to August 2012. The department contracted Weimark initially for an amount of 92.8 million rand for the core solution, but four addendums were signed, and that has rise to a total contract value of 412.5 million rand. As at 31st March 2012, the department paid 341.6 million rand already to Weimark Infotech, although the firearm control system was still not completed 70 months after the initial date on which the system had to be handed over to the department, being 5 July 2006. The contract was then placed on hold since 30 August 2012, and another deficiency that we identified was that the specific contract did not include a skills development plan which would equip the CETA resources to maintain the system after development and implementation, and this was a requirement according to the terms of reference. If we can move over to the refurbishment of the NYONAS, the department appointed two contractors to assist him with the refurbishment, one being BIE Land Systems and Black Capital. The total estimated cost for the contract amounted to 79.6 million rand, and the contract term was from October 2008 up until February 2011 when the last NYONAS were delivered by Black Capital. The first deficiency that we find there was that the amount or the cost has been underestimated during the needs determination. And there was two factors that influenced that. The first thing is that the department did not previously refurbish NYONAS at all. And secondly, the department did not have the required expertise and skills to perform these accurate assessments. So as a result, the department paid 176.7 million rand, which is 122% more than what the initial contract value was when the contract was concluded. The second deficiency revolves around the project handling fees or markup fees that were charged. That is now in the case where the consultant or the contractor goes out and they make use of a subcontractor. They included a specific project handling fee or a markup fee, where the department paid for that and it was not specifically provided for in the contract. Now, this lack of contractual clarity resulted in the two different contractors charging different rates for handling fees. So BIE charged a 15% handling fee, whereas Black Capital charged a 50% handling fee, which was inconsistent between the two contractors. The auditors took a sample or selected items, 19 NYONAS to have a look at further. And for those specific 19 YALAs, during our audit, we found that handling fees to the amount of 1.8 million rand was paid. So for a specific amount where subcontractors were used for specific functions, the department paid handling fees of 1.8 million rand to the initial suppliers that was appointed for this contract. Then the next deficiency focused on the project deliverables that were not met on time. The NIONAS had to be refurbished in time for the 2010 World Cup. And the contractual delivery date was 28th of February 2010. 200 NIONAS were refurbished, of which 44 or 22% were delivered after the contractual delivery date of 28th February. So taking that into account, moving it forward to the FIFA World Cup in July, subsequent to the FIFA World Cup, 17 or 43% of Black Capital's NIONAS were delivered after the World Cup. Then in terms of non-compliance with the conditions of warranty, the department, as part of their conditions to the contract, had to service the NIONAS every 5,000 kilometers to make sure that should something happen, those NIONAS will be covered by the warranty. In our selection of 10 NIONAS, 6 of them were not serviced according to the conditions of the warranty. And in terms of the other 9 NIONAS that we tested on that capital side, 3 of them was changed subsequently, the speedometers was changed, so we could not determine whether the NIONAS had moved 4,000 or 5,000 kilometers or not. Then in terms of adult basic and education and training, there we focused on 3 different suppliers. The first supplier being the Lloyd and Tisch in partnership with Contract Literacy. And we found certain discrepancies during the appointment process that were not attended to by the department. The first one is Project Literacy also putting a tender separately on his own for the specific project, but their tender was, or their bid was disqualified at in the beginning during the procurement process. The second thing is in terms of the Lloyd's, the company and the VAT registration number between the invoices and the specific tender did not agree. It belonged to another company within the same group of companies. Thirdly, there became a discrepancy in the interpretation during the contract, which resulted in the department ceding this specific contract to Project Literacy. Now, you will recall that Project Literacy were in the first place disqualified on their own during the tender process. It was ceded to Project Literacy, and then at the end, Project Literacy was unable to comply with the project deliverables, and the process for provisioning of aided service was delayed by another year, because then the department had to go out on tender again, get again all the bids in, evaluate, and appoint a new consultant or contractor. On slide 13, the next one is the third consultant or contractor on the adult basic education and training. You will see the department appointed to the adult center at a cost of 10.2 million rand for a 3-year period of November 2008 to March 2011. There we found that the terms of contract was amended without the agreement in writing. So when you know that you engage into a contract, it is very important that every change to a contract should be in writing and it must be approved and agreed by both parties to make sure that you're liable. So At the end of the day, the department had to change the specific contract period from 3 years to ultimately 29 months to make sure that the contract run over financial years and not the initial years than what the contract was awarded to it. So within that period, that also gave rise to the terms of the contract as indicated being amended, and that change and that resulted in payments being made that is not in accordance with the original contract. The next contract that we focused on was in terms of the internal audit services, where the department appointed ALO Consortium twice. The first time was in December 2002, and ultimately the contract value between the two appointments was 87.2 million rand, where the department concluded on the services of ALO Consortium during March 2010. The findings in respect of performance management related to the second contract of ALO Consortium, where we indicated that some contractual obligations relating to formal training initiatives were not achieved, and that was due to the difficulty that was experienced with scheduling due to the underestimation of the workload of the people. The second issue surrounds where the department did not create a conducive environment to the consultant and internal audit performing their duties effectively due to a lack of equipment, specifically laptops that were not there, which hindered the process of providing training by the consultant firstly, and secondly also to the department staff in achieving their objective by completing the work. The shortage of laptops varied from 42% in 2008 to 17% in 2009 and 61% in 2010. Last but not least, we focused on a transversal finding in terms of closing the project. We identified six contracts to the value of 169.3 million rand, where the non-performance of a retrospective analysis or the assessment of the consultant's performance were not done. At the end of the day, when the department needs to go and contract somebody else again, they need to have this type of information that they can refer back to say, but was I happy with the service that the specific consultant delivered, and then also in terms of the supply chain management processes that were followed, whether they were correct in terms of the policies and the guidelines. That is closing off the specific details in terms of the contracts. I'm going to hand back to Naeem to quickly take us through the key recommendations.
Thank you, Krishna, for providing that detail to us. And I'll remind the members and chairperson that the detail that Krishna has gone through is contained in our report that was tabled, which is available on our website, www.agsa.co.za. And if you require a copy, our office will be happy to provide that to you. Chair, reflecting on the findings that Krishna has taken into, it's important to firstly, before we look at the recommendations, to remember that this was not an investigation. The work that was conducted was not an investigation. Rather, it was a performance audit, which was focused on analyzing case studies to determine whether we obtained value for money, whether the VEs that we spoke about in terms of economy, efficiency, and effectiveness have been achieved, and ultimately have they translated in value for money for the department. In terms of the recommendations that we have made in the report and which are tabled on page 40 in the detailed report, importantly, in terms of this quest to achieve value for money, it starts with compliance with legal frameworks, laws, regulations, and policies. Many of the existing prescripts have built into them mechanisms that will ensure that we achieve value for money. And so hence, sticking to these prescripts and ensuring that we adopt the spirit of what is contained in them is absolutely important. Other recommendations we've made revolve around indicating maximum contract value and number of hours in contracts. And this is important to make sure that contracts are not open-ended, that they specify a ceiling amount, a cap, in terms of the expenditure, and not to leave them as a runaway train, so to speak. Other recommendations we've made in the report relate to training and transfer of skills, and this is quite important. Many cases we use consultants because we don't have that skill internally. And so the use of a consultant provides us with a wonderful opportunity to impart some of that knowledge onto our own people. However, this doesn't happen in isolation. It needs to be planned for. It needs to be properly monitored to make sure that that which is committed by the consultant, if the consultant says, I will transfer skills to your staff, that it will happen. And it needs to be properly monitored, checked to make sure that it's happening, make sure we have the people available so that the consultants can train, so that this process happens robustly. And that brings me to the other recommendation around creating sufficient internal capacity to avoid the extension of contracts. So we may find ourselves in a situation where we have a need based on us not having capacity internally. However, as we appoint the consultant, we must at the same time start a parallel process to start firming up that capacity so that we are able to phase out the consultant that we brought in because of the capacity issue and phase in our own staff to take over that role. We also recognize that there are instances where the use of a consultant would be warranted. For instance, there may be certain skill sets which are not cost-effective or efficient for the department to develop itself. And a great way of looking at this, for example, is to say, government procures its mobile phones from companies. We don't expect government to build its own mobile phones because of the intellectual property involved and sheer cost and scale of it is beyond the department. Likewise, there are certain specialized skill sets that get researched and developed internationally and are brought to us at a much lower cost than which we could actually develop it ourselves. And definitely in instances like that, there would be bona fide cases for the use of consultants. Importantly, managing and monitoring the performance of consultants is absolutely vital. And we often talk about this internally using the example of, if you brought somebody to do work in your own house, would you just leave them to do whatever they wanted to? Or would you make sure that they are delivering what you paid them for? That they are actually doing what they said they're going to do. And they're not, you haven't brought them in for one thing and they end up doing something else. So monitoring the managing the performance of a consultant is absolutely essential. And it's in this principle that one must acknowledge that between the department and the consultant must always exist this arm's length relationship. They are a third party. And we must always consider them a third party that needs to be managed and monitored to make sure that they are delivering that which we have contracted them in to deliver. We spoke earlier about planning, and remember I said that if we don't get planning right, that it leads to many other problems down the line. And an important part of planning, which we've made a recommendation around, is doing the needs assessment upfront. And this includes getting more accurate with your cost estimates. And this is an area where if we pay a lot more attention to, it will help us later on. We'll find less contract extensions. We'll find more projects that are actually delivering and achieving the effectiveness. That means they are achieving the objective which we've set out for. And so planning and making sure that we understand the milestones, when we're going to get it, who's going to get it, what are we going to do with it, who's going to do what with it, are very important as to think about when we do the needs assessment. Along with whether this is actually a service that actually needs to be procured from a consultant. What is the best way for us to do this, keeping in mind the three E's of, is this economical? Does it represent the right price at the right time at the right cost? Will it help us achieve our objectives, i.e. the efficiency? And will it actually be an optimal use of whatever resources we put into it? We have also made a recommendation to say, again, keeping in mind that this is not an investigation. But where there may be instances of possible irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we are sure the department itself has already started looking at aspects like this, and we certainly hope that, that these areas will be investigated. Many of these contracts relate to a period which have been already covered by some of the financial statements, so no doubt some of it may have been reported in the regularity audit outcomes for the past couple of years. The last recommendation that we just wanted to touch on in terms of our quest to obtain value for money, and I alluded to this earlier, is the important principle of learning from the past and applying it in the future. And this is really vital. This audit covers a period from 2008-09 to around 2011. And while it's important for us to correct the deviations that we have identified and to make sure that we hold people accountable, we must importantly consider what it means for our future use of consultants. So the mistakes we've made in the past, let us not make them the same mistakes in future, and let's benefit from the hindsight that we have obtained. Chairperson and honourable members, on the next slide, we presented here an important slide. And this is about talking about combined assurance. We reflected on the use of consultants. And when we reflect on the use of consultants, we said to ourselves, for any organization, whether you are in the private sector or public sector, using consultants brings with it certain risks. Yes, they are rewards, but it brings with it certain risks. And in order for us to gain assurance that those risks are properly managed, requires three levels of assurance. The first level is that what we call management assurance. So management themselves, the people running the department, senior management, the accounting officers and various authorities, as well as the executive authority, are our first line of defense. They are our first line of assurance in terms of ensuring that they take action to address whatever deviations and weaknesses they identify, that they hold officials accountable for the use of resources and report annually on the use of consultants, and that the executive authority monitors the use of consultants and enforces accountability and consequences. So that is our first level of assurance. The next level of assurance around the use of consultants, honourable members, comes from the coordinating and monitoring institutions. Internal audit, the audit committee, play an absolutely vital role in ensuring that this risk is managed correctly. Coordinating institutions like National Treasury and DPSA, working closely with them and having them monitor compliance with laws, regulations is recommended. But internal audit, as I said, importantly for internal audit to follow up on the findings from this report, for example, but also to do their own performance audits. Performance audits are not the sole mandate of the Auditor General of South Africa. A performance audit can and should be performed by internal audit itself, looking at the 3 E's and doing this on a more regular basis. The members will appreciate that the Auditor General cannot do this kind of activity every year. And so, given our scarce resources, we prioritize. So we may come back in a couple of years' time and do a follow-up to this. However, nothing stops us from doing this kind of work on a regular basis and having that reported back. As I said, the audit committee play an important role as well to make sure that this risk is amongst the other risks that they are keeping track of and making sure that we get sufficient assurance on that it's being managed correctly. So that's the second line of defense. The third line of defense to make sure that the risks inherent in the use of consultants don't emanate is then the independent assurance, which is oversight, such as this committee, the various councils, various public accounts committees, and ourselves as the Auditor General, as the independent party. So I think the key message for us here is that it's not up to the Auditor General to give assurance around this, that there's a role for everybody to play right through the entire chain. And when this functions effectively, the risk inherent in the use of consultants will be properly managed and reduced to the point where we achieve the value for money we so desperately seek. Honourable members, Chairperson, the next page just reflects the fact that in order for us to achieve this value for money, required commitment from all interested parties. And this just sums up the previous slide. We have also reflected, and it is contained in our legal report, that we have gained commitment from various parties to the issues that have been highlighted in this report, from the coordinating institution through the department itself, We have noted that there is commitment to address the deficiencies that have been identified, and in many cases action has been taken already, and we commend the department on that. Honourable Members, Chairperson, I will end off on a slide which is important, I think, for us to keep in mind, and it's a message that we as an office have been putting out since the time that this report has been tabled, and it's that this equation, that the public sector working with the private sector is what creates an enhanced level of value for the citizen at the end of the day, and that it's this equation that needs to be balanced. And when we get imbalances in this equation, we end up with problems such as those which we identify. Now, this report and much of the work we do is focused on the left-hand side of that equation in terms of the public sector. However, through our work, we have identified that the right-hand side of the equation, the private sector, also needs to be firmed up to make sure that this risk is managed appropriately. And so the private sector, we have made an appeal to them that they should not take advantages of weaknesses in internal controls when they find them. And we've appealed to the private sector to operate on the basis of being good corporate citizens with a good corporate conscience, to stop malpractices where they see them and to govern themselves and support stronger governance in the public sector. It is with this in mind that we feel that realizing this common goal of economic success requires an effort by both the public sector and the private sector, notwithstanding the fact that we still have to address seriously the issues that we have identified in this report. Chairperson, members, that brings me to the end of our presentation. We remain at your disposal to answer questions.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to take questions now. I'm going to take the other presentations first. Otherwise, we're going to get stuck with one presentation and not get covered. I'm going to allow the Secretary of Police to make their presentation. I want to, again, direct both the Secretariat as well as the Department to the letter that we wrote to you in terms of this presentation, in which we ask you to focus on the way forward and what corrective action has been and will be taken by the department in the case of the Secretariat in terms of the oversight. So please, and I'm pleading with the police because I've seen your presentation, don't come here and present the contract to us again. Present to us what you are going to do to correct it. We're not interested to hear about the contract and the problems around the contract. We do know that most probably better than some of yourselves. So, Secretary, over to you. You've got 20 minutes for your presentation.
Thanks, Chair. Just to introduce, on my left, I'm Jenny Irish Kabushani, Secretary of Police, and on my left is Florence Matoma from our Monitoring and Evaluation Department, the department that will be responsible for some of the oversight. Chair, before going into the details of what needs to be done, there's one area that I think we first need to unpack with regard to the Auditor General's report. That if you look at the report that has been submitted from the Auditor General of consultant fees that were spent, where $4.039 billion was spent during that period, 2008 to 2011, it's important to also look at the breakdown per year, and this is something which we as a site body and reporting to the Minister need to look at, is that if you look at the agency and support, while the consultancy fees for that period declined by over $7 million, so if you look at what was spent in 2008-09 and then what was spent in 2019, where the consultant fees were up to $100 million, it then decreased to just over $100 million. So it decreased by nearly $700 million, which is probably positive, but we need to understand why it decreased. Why did consultancy fees go up so high in 2009 and 10 and then decline so substantially? And the same applies to contractors. Contractors show a slightly opposite trend where they increased by over $300 million from 2009 10 to 2010-11, and I think that's something we need to unpack. There may be legitimate reasons for that, why that happened, but we need to unpack exactly what led to that variance in 2010-11. And then particularly agencies and support outsourced services. If you look at the 2 years, 2008-09, 2009-10, minimal amounts, less, I mean, it's not even 50,000, but from the graph that was spent on those. However, in 2010-11, it goes up it jumps up quite substantially, basically almost by 400 million. And I think that we're not arguing that there is a specific problem there, but as part of the oversight structure, we need to unpack and understand why those changes occurred in the spending patterns. So I think that's the first point that we raise on slide one of the presentation. I see it's not up on the board. Okay. But I think our members have got it in front of them. Is that correct?
Okay. At least it's not going to appear on the board by itself. You must manage
computer. Sorry, I apologize about that. Okay. Then if you look at the next issue, and we have identified the generic recommendations of the AG, because I think when we look at our civilian oversight functions, if we need to look at those specific generic findings of the AG. But I think that the first is on the general findings, the issue of improvement of internal processes and structures with regard to accounting officers, BAC, which is the Bid Adjudication Committee, HRC directorates, and staff involved in appointing and management of consultants. Focus on compliance and value for money. So when we're looking at our oversight function, that is one area that we need to be looking at. Another is sanctions implemented for non-compliance. And when we come to the end of the presentation, we will refer specifically to what action the minister is looking at based on the consultations with the AG to deal with sanctions implemented for non-compliance. Obviously, we would also want to liaise with National Treasury and DPSA, who, according to the AG, should monitor compliance and enforcement actions where deviations occur. And also, the use of consultants should be included in reports and plans submitted to the PC, to the Portfolio Committee. And what we would also like to do is to make sure that those reports are also submitted to the minister, so that what we're not finding is we kind of playing catch up with contracts that we become aware of. So we become aware of TETRA kind of halfway through the project, and then are trying to play catch up with regard to the issues around TETRA. But if we receive those reports and plans up front, it becomes easier to monitor. And then obviously we need to look at the quarterly oversight reports of the Portfolio Committee and SCOPA. The other generic finding across departments that was raised by the Auditor General that we would need to look at is the types and extents of services being outsourced needs to be analysed. So looking at the issue of permanent capacity required versus non-core nature of the service, and the cost of outsourcing versus permanent capacity. And we're going to come back to that specifically with relation to SAPs later. And proper planning must be done before the issuing the request, and tenders must be detailed, clear, and unambiguous. And I think that particularly relates to some of the issues where we need to be clear that the objectives we're getting out of the tender are actually being met. Internal capacity, looking at the issue of regularly assessing internal capacity, updated HR plan, staff retention strategies and priority post plans, and then training and transfer of skills. The recommendations from the AG is that contractors must provide for transfers of skills, and that must be agreed upon up front. Staff to whom skills must be transferred must be made available, and that's one of the things that I think we need to look at quite carefully at SAPS. It's all very well to make an issue with the contractor in terms of transferring of skills, but then you need to make sure that SAPS is available for that transfer of skills and that the right people are receiving that transfer of skills. Performance managing and monitoring. Competitive bid processes must be followed and reasons for deviations recorded. Section central to the process should pay specific attention to compliance. Contracts should take cognizance of the general conditions of contract as prescribed by National Treasury. Contracts be clear and detailed with clearly defined roles and responsibilities.
proper contract management and monitoring, including price, deliverables, etc., must be in place. Regular process meetings must occur and evidence kept of these meetings. Follow-up action must be taken promptly, because sometimes we're picking up the problems a year or 2 years into the contract, and that's just not acceptable. Periods of consultants' contracts should be managed and monitored. I think the AG has already spoken about the issue of extensions of contracts. Extensions should only occur in exceptional cases. I think that if you look at the sample that the AG did, that the extensions of contracts is happening too regularly, and that compliance to prescripts must be followed with regard to extensions. Closure and finalization of projects, ensure timeous implementation of contract deliverables. And I think if you look at all the contracts that the AAG audited, the timelines were a serious problem. And retrospective analysis done on each project to determine whether proper processes were followed and whether desired objects were achieved. Then some of the specific some of the general issues with regard to the Department of Police that we would need to be looking at as a secretariat is the need to draw the distinction between consultants and service providers. I don't think we need to be clear on what is a consultant and what is a service provider. If we're going to provide oversight, that is something which we need to address. We also need to look at what are the core roles of police. We've been saying to the police, you shouldn't become jack of all trades. You should focus on your core function as policing. But then that is going to mean that you're going to have to use service providers and consultants for certain areas. So we need to engage with SAPS about that issue, but also then making sure that SAPS doesn't become dependent, and that we're not talking about a privatization process in that regard. So there's that balancing act that we need to get more clarity on. But also the issue of dependency on consultants, that there will be areas where police may need to make use of expertise not readily available, but we must ensure that we don't become dependent on consultants in that regard, that at the end of the day we're able to manage the systems after the contract is terminated. One of the areas that we've identified, which may not come out so much in the Auditor General's report, is operational staff need to be more involved in the projects, both with regard to the needs and with regard to the implementation and assessment of deliverables and whether objectives are being met. That this is particularly the case when you talk about things like technology projects, which are often complicated and technology issues are complicated. Those technology projects exist to serve as the operational arm of SAPS. And therefore, it's the operational arm that must determine what they want, what objectives they want to receive out of that. And they need to be involved in the monitoring and the assessment of whether, in fact, their objectives are being met throughout. It can't just be left to TSM to then monitor that process. The operational staff have got to be able to say, look, we're 6 months or a year into this contract, and it's not actually working in terms of what we want to receive as objectives, because those projects need to be driven by the clients, which in the instance of SAPS are the operational arms of SAPS. One of the things that we've also picked up, which may not come up so clearly in the AG's report, is the drafting of contracts needs to be addressed. So the legal drafting of contracts is something that we need to look at quite carefully. The contracts should not be prejudicial to SAPS and in favour of the consultants. They need to be, in fact, they need to be in favour of SAPS as the people to whom the service is being provided. So we really need to look at how the contracts are being drafted, because sometimes when we come across problems, we find that the contract that has been drafted is not really helping us at all in that regard. And project plans need to ensure proper maintenance of objectives after the consultants depart. That sometimes the project will only cover the scope of when the consultant is there, but what happens afterwards? If the consultant is coming in to put up a system, what happens after that system in terms of maintenance of that system and the cost for maintenance of that system? Sometimes that is not properly planned for in SAPS, and that needs to become part of the project plan. Monitoring mechanisms need to be properly established, and as I said earlier, they need to involve the client. So the monitoring mechanisms cannot just be set up
by supply chain or TSM. They need to involve the clients, which in the case of FACT would be if it's the e-docket, detective services, if it's the central firearms registry, or the permit system, it needs to involve the VISPOL in those systems that are set up to monitor it. And those monitoring mechanisms need to be set up front in the project plans. And that clear reporting of contracts and objectives need to be implemented. As I said earlier, we need to make sure that we're not trying to monitor a contract that has already been in existence for 5 years, like is the case with the firearms permit system, where you're picking up that you're trying to deal with a contract which has already been in existence for 5 years. If we know up front what the contracts are, what the consultants are being employed for, it makes oversight that much easier. And non-compliance should be reported in terms of the quarterly review reports, which are submitted in terms of the PFMA within the department to the executive authority. Non-compliance needs to be addressed in that. But I think also what we need to identify is that internal audit within SAS needs to be responsible for the day-to-day monitoring. I think we will come and look at the role of the civilian secretariat for police later on, but essentially internal audit has a responsibility within SAS to be dealing with the nitty-gritties of the monitoring of those things, and we'll talk then about. We've also then identified two specific areas where we feel that specific attention needs to be paid in terms of consultants and service providers, etc. And the first is that of technology management services. And the reason why this requires specific attention is that this speaks to one of our key 10 priority areas, which is ensuring that we look at a smarter policing and look at policing more smartly, but also because of the amount of budget and SACs that is spent on technology, and it's quite extensive. So when we are looking at our oversight role, we need to look specifically at technology management services, and we need to look at it in the context of what is happening internationally with technology. That internationally, technology in a very, very real sense is transforming police in a fundamental respect. New and emerging technologies are playing an increasingly crucial role in daily work of frontline police officers. But although technology can improve policing, if it's not properly planned, assessed and implemented, it can only lead to waste of resources and also provide a blockage preventing the police from operating effectively. So when we look at the management of consultants, etc., in the technology services, this is what we need to be looking at as the civilian secretariat for police, is the ability for that to impact on our frontline policing, but also the ability for it to lead to wasteful expenditure and even blockages in operations. And the first area that we believe needs to be looked at is greater operational involvement in solutions and understanding of the project and deliverables. If particularly in technology, it's an intimidating area. So often operational people are not involved in what solutions they want and understanding exactly how that project works. And if you don't understand as an operational person how that project works, you can't monitor it. You can't assess whether the objectives are actually meeting your requirements, but also sometimes you may not utilize the project to the full extent that is available to you. So that's one of the areas we would like to see. And technology projects must be pre-planned and reported on. We can't hear after the fact that there wasn't a project plan. We need to know that there are project plans up front as to those projects. Proper project plans must be developed with an interface with the operational arm. Because at the end of the day, if you're developing e-docket, you're not just developing it as a technology project, you're developing it to service a detective. So the detective's needs and requirements must become part of that operational planning. Regular reports on progress of plans must be submitted, and I think we have systems in place within the PFMA where regular reports and processes are submitted to the executive authority and even to Parliament, and technology projects need to become part of that reporting process. And skills transfer to operational staff is essential. We have systems sometimes even at a local station level which are incredibly useful, the OPAM system, whatever. But we need to make sure that our operational staff are able to utilize those systems effectively. And although this is not about fast and effectively, it is about whether the use of, whether we're bringing in consultants and whether, in fact, those consultants are having an impact at the end of the day. Impact assessments must be conducted when a consultant, at the end of the consultant period. So it's not just about whether the person met their targets, but what impact has, if we are saying that we're putting in place the firearm permit system, what impact is that having on policing? Because that speaks to then the effectiveness of those consultancy projects that we've used. And post-contract planning must include costing, that sometimes we only cost for the period of the consultants, but they cost after those consultants leave, which haven't always been dealt with. With regard to the second area that we would want to focus on in terms of our oversight is that of supply chain management. And we've already spoken about greater involvement of operations in the planning stage and deliverables. That there are areas where it would be useful to look at expert assistance that could be included in the planning stage as to what you require. And I think the Nialas is a specific example of that, where if you brought in experts, you might have dealt in terms of what was required in terms of refurbishment. Project plans must be known to the people to whom they service. So if you're going to be using consultants, the project plans shouldn't just be vested with supply chain. They need to also be understood fully by the operational component. And we're not saying that all these things are not happening, but we're saying these are just some of the general things that we need to be looking at. Projects should specifically address subcontracting and associated fees, ensure better contract management with clear milestones and deliverables. Clear monitoring teams should be established and should involve operational persons, and there should be consequences for non-deliverables. In terms of the role then of the Civilian Secretariat for Police, and I think we need to be clear that there are internal mechanisms in SACS, and I think the Auditor General has referred to that, that need to be involved in the monitoring processes, and that involves internal audit, the accounting officer, etc., and all those different mechanisms. And it's not the role of the Secretariat to replace those functions. So we do not want to get ourselves involved in the monitoring to the extent where we become accountable for what is happening in those projects. And so I think we would be looking at monitoring at a slightly different level. And the first is the need to monitor the existence of such contracts. We need to know what contracts are being embarked on and what impact what are the objectives of those contracts and what is the impact on policing of those contracts. And then we need to be clear that the Civilian Secretariat for Police is not the accounting authority for the police, and we will not kind of account for what is happening in those contracts. We rather an oversight and reporting to Parliament and the Executive Authority on those matters. The review of reports, that we spoke about the fact that there needs to be reports that are submitted. The internal audit needs to be involved in the nitty-gritties of the monitoring. But the overall quarterly reports, we need to have access to those reports as a Civilian Secretariat for Police, so we have a sense of what is going on with regard to these contracts. But one of the areas of our focus should be not so much on the nitty-gritty of the financial things. Yes, we can pick those up as required, but our primary focus should be on if we are going to be paying $472 million for a firearm permit system, what impact is that having on the licensing process and firearms within SAS? So one of the focus areas of the Civilian Secretariat for Police is to say, we're spending this on this, what is the impact on policing, and is this having an impact on policing, rather to get involved in the nitty-gritties of the finances, etc., which I think we need to make sure that is SAPS's responsibility to deal with that. So we could look at it on a broader scale, but not in terms of the detail. And then we need to look at overall the systems that SAPS has in place to monitor. So the Auditor General has made a whole lot of recommendations about project plans, monitoring teams, that need to be set up, processes that each department needs to have in place.
You need to wrap up, please.
Okay, so I've just got two more points. So we need to look at whether SAPs have put those systems in place rather to then become the systems that monitor that. And assess the processes to improve the use of consultants in SAPs. Finally, just in terms of specific interventions on the Auditor General's report, and I think the Auditor General spoke about the need to look at, in some cases, there may need to be investigations into what has happened, and I think it needs to be, the Portfolio Committee needs to be informed that the Minister has met with both the SIU and the DPCI, and that they are currently involved in investigations into some of the processes with regard to the AG's report, and that based on this investigation, action may be taken against individual members.
Thank you very much. Members, please, ready. I'm going to allow us a 10-minute break. We come back with police, be ready to present in 10 minutes' time, and then we will take questions from members and responses from the Auditor General and the Department and the Secretariat. T will is our five. Thanks.
Yeah. because we are outside the process, we are in total growth. You say we are in total growth.
If we can start, if we can get the people in from outside, we can start. Such is leading the delegation.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. I'm Lieutenant General Mufume. We have an apology from the National Commissioner. She is not able to attend today. Our team consists of members from divisions, supply chain, technology management, HRD, internal audit, as well as visible policing. We also have members from the Office of the National Commissioner. And the different members will present. We have heard what you have indicated, that we go straight to the way forward. So we will not repeat what has been already presented by the Auditor General. On the project.
Commissioner Mufume, can I ask you that you introduce the delegation, please?
Just
Introduce the delegation, please.
Yes. To introduce the delegation, we have got Lieutenant General Skete is our CFO, Lieutenant General Cruiser, Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain Management, Lieutenant General Ngubane is Technology Management, and then from HRD we have Brigadier Mushabi, Lieutenant General Mbekela is not able to attend, she's out of the country. Then we have got from Visible Policing, Lieutenant General Motiba. And then from the internal audit is Major General Nkosi, the lady. And the two colleagues, that side we have got Major General Butelezi and Major General Kabela. They are both from TMS. So I will then request the CFO, General Skete, he will also address some of the issues. And then the divisional commissioners will also present on Robert Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Each one of the main principals will address his or her environment in terms of the subject matters and the findings thereof, and as you've indicated, with emphasis on the way forward. I would just like to also endorse with the AG to a certain extent, and then the Secretary for Police also said regarding the question of, we all use in daily language the word consultants, but they are not really consultants as in the true sense of the word every and all the time. I think we have to refer to, and it's also on page 10 of the AG report, that consultants, you have consultants and you have got contractors and then you've got outsourced services. So they're not all specifically consultants, because consultants have a specific connotation, so to speak, and some of them are mere service providers. Therefore, when we unpack these things, especially in time to come, we will make that distinction. It's so important for us. For instance, if you look at the occupations that were probably involved in providing these services, they were mechanics repairing the Mayalas and engineers. They were auditors assisting with internal audit function at the time. They were programmers and project managers in terms of the firearm control system. And they were people who taught, educators to a certain extent in this regard. So it's very important that we just take note of it. But we will wait for questions and answers in order to go in detail. I think the principals must now present the presentation of SAPS. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to deal with the issue of NALA, with a focus to refurbish 200 NALAs to its original manufacturer specification. Maybe just to say firstly that the police were left with a dilemma in terms of whether we should buy new NALAs or refurbish. On looking at the price of new NALAs, they were focused about 4.5 to 5 million rand each, a brand new one. And then a decision was made to refurbish 200 NALAs, which was not in use, but standing all over the country. It was since 94 they were not used because of a new dispensation. These vehicles are very specialized in nature, and part of the 2010 program is also to ensure legacy, that we can use the vehicles post-2010, and I think, as is commonly known, the Duans, the Platinum Belt, and other service area unrest, these things have become very useful for the police service. The conditions of the vehicles were varied. They were all older than 15 years old at the time, and they were not in use. They were all parked somewhere. The process for refurbishment includes the following things. I won't go through them. They're on the presentation to save some time. What was critical when we identified the issue of refurbishing, we set up a basket of items for pricing and comparative purposes regarding the bidding process. And this basket includes items that were most likely required to replacement all of them or the majority of the vehicle itself. The special conditions of bid required a successful bidder to compile a detailed quotation for vehicle for submission and approval prior to the repairs be conducted. The procurement in essence took place firstly through a bidding process, but also secondly, also by the way of quotation. So every single vehicle, after being stripped and was identified was wrong, they had to come back, signed off by a SAPS mechanic. The quotation was then verified financial and the supply chain process. Only then it was authorized and paid. We have to ensure that we have the relevant knowledge and skills to perform the service and focus on items anticipated for replacement of Hilversum. And as I said, the quotations was based on the baskets. Also, at some stage, there were additional items out of the basket, which the companies, the mechanics found to be wrong with the vehicle, which was then also included for the refurbishment. The bid was evaluated and awarded to two providers as stipulated by the AG, so I won't go into the details. I think the findings, I think the AG has already spoke to the findings, I won't repeat the issue of findings. In terms of South African Police Service respond to the issue, we accept that I think we could have maybe identified or defined the basket a bit better. And we think maybe we could have got outside assistance, maybe through arms care, who was more specialized in armored vehicles than we are in the police. And maybe we could define the basket better in that way. Future project will be specifically address the issue of subcontracting associate fees. These are really putting our new specifications when we put out bids, so we ensure that they're in specifications before we advertise the bids itself. Ensure better contract management with clear milestones and deliverables. Again, we have put that in place and ensure that the head of acquisition sticks to those plans and report back to us. Monitoring mechanisms have already been implemented in terms of warranties and early monitoring motions plan. We use the early warning system on the asset register so we can see in terms of the mileage of the vehicles via our systems, and we can indicate to people now, before we never had the tracking systems in our vehicles, we can now from the system see when a vehicle reaches 500,000 Ks or 10,000 Ks in service, and we can activate that they go for service itself, both at the national and the provincial level. Lastly, there was a finding of possible irregular expenditure, which is currently clarified by Treasury as in our last annual report. Chair, that's the essence around a short briefing around the issue of the Nyalas. I'm glad over to the next president.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll talk about the APET project. In terms of the way forward, what we have seen from our side was that we did make some changes to the contract without documenting and signing those changes. So going forward, we will look into that. The other thing that we saw was that the contract period, whenever we entered into contract, we didn't specify whether it was financial year or calendar month. So that is also being taken care of. And also, I think the Secretariat also spoke on it, the issue of being clear on the specifications. We need to also get our partners in terms of legal service in the legal drafting of contracts and make sure that whenever there are changes, also supply chain management comes into the picture. But overall, all in all, at the end of the day, there was a saving on that contract share. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Morning. With regard to internal audit side, note much should be taken that the processing of the ALU consortium, it was due to the capacity and also the mere aspect of the transfer skills. Looking at the findings which has been raised by AG with regard to training, the training was initially not part of the skills audit plan, but in future it will be, where it will also be linked to the training administration system, which will give feedback on how the training has been implemented from internal audit side, and also giving into effect the impact that has made to internal auditors. Also, the contract was extended as much as I said with the transfer of skills and training members because it was not yet adequate. Note also should be taken wherein we are saying the capacity within SAPS internal audit has been really gradually, you know, grown, wherein it has got a largest staff establishment when it comes to government departments. And with regard to the procurement process of the laptops, I would like to give it to General Ngubane to respond, and I will go back to the other part. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we have at TMS put together a governance structure which we call the Technology User Council. In the past, the issue of supplying equipment, laptops, desktops and so forth to the organisation was done on an ad hoc manner because it was not properly, the user requirements were not properly coordinated and planned for. As from now on, we are going to have a Technology User Council which will basically prioritize all requirements and in terms of the available budget and be able to address issues where laptops are required, as in the case of the training for internal audit. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. General, with regard to the non-performance of responsibilities analysis and assessment of consultants' performance, we have outlined that the closing of projects will be done by means of a letter to SCM in future. The provisions of the contract will be compared to the value delivered, and the impact will also be monitored. That impact assessment and that responsibility will lie between us and supply chain. Thank you. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. The report basically repeats the findings of the Auditor General, which have been quite adequately described by the Auditor General, so we'll not repeat that. I do, however, want to go to the corrective actions, which is the last slide, and paint a little bit of a context to that, because the question might be, if we have not delivered this project over 70 months, how are we now going to do it? I think it's important, Chair, to note that at the time when this contract was awarded, we did not have capacity because at the incorporation of CETA, all the capacity of the South African Police Service was transferred to CETA in total. So these are the first contract that was done after that transfer of skills. Hence the requirement for an outside party to actually come in and do the project. The other maybe misunderstanding or confusion at this stage was the fact that the CETA regulation had not been promulgated at that time. And the regulations were actually promulgated after the award of the contract. If you look at the award letter itself, it's as though the contract is between CETA and the supplier, the service provider, when in fact it was between the South African Police Service and the supplier. So those are some of the things that have been resolved later. As I said, the regulations now specify two modes of procurement. One is procurement through CETA, where CETA acts as an agency, which is the case here, or procurement from CETA. This is when we have a service level agreement with CETA, and CETA then goes out and procures the service on our behalf. So in this particular case, it was an agency arrangement where CETA basically awarded the contract on our behalf and then handed over the contract to us. So basically, where we are right now, we have terminated the services of Waymark, and we were careful in actually doing that because Waymark is still of the view that the contract is valid. So we have awaiting a legal opinion as to the validity of the contract because, according to us, the contract expired with its addendum. However, we are awaiting a legal opinion on that, as well as opinion from senior counsel in terms of the expenditure, whether it is regular or irregular. Because again, if we look at the delegation of authority that the general had at that time, she was within her authority to sign the various addenda. So that is a matter that we are still awaiting the senior counsel as well as national treasurer to pronounce on. We have also from internally asked our DPCI to investigate if there is any wrongdoing by any individual as far as this contract is concerned. One of my concerns was the fact that we bought equipment, obviously not going through a competitive bidding process. Now, so the issue there was whether SAPS derived value for money on those procurements. So that is what DPCI is looking at. However, the legality or non-legality of the contract, that is a matter that we're still awaiting to hear. The project itself is 80% complete according to the supplier. We have now engaged the CSIR as an independent party to actually help us to assess the completion status of the project. We have now also put together a team, an internal team, a development team that is going to finish the project. We have the necessary skills. We have identified the skills that we require. We have the necessary contracts that we have put in place by supply chain that we'll be using to complete the project. I am personally confident that we will be able to complete the project within the specified time that we are going to set. Just to expand on the reason why we believe that we can complete this project now, as I said earlier, we did not have capacity at that time. We have since put together an enterprise program management office. This is to enable us to, first of all, effect proper project governance according to best practices, to enable integration within and among other projects. An example is where we go into projects without thinking what are the other dependencies on the project. For instance, we want to roll out the system, whereas there is a national network upgrade program that is also got its own different priorities. So we find that at the rollout stage, the police stations that we want to roll out to do not have the necessary network points because the other project, the NNUP, has a different priority list. So we need to synchronize these things in one common platform, which is the Enterprise Program Management Office. The third reason why we need this, and I think the Secretary has alluded to this, is that we need proper reporting and risk management in projects. Again, this is a best practice that we are employing in the Project Management Office. Some of the structures that I talked about, and I've mentioned the technology user council. This is where, again, we are going to have all the user areas within the police sitting together, looking at all the requirements, prioritizing, again, based on the available budget, so that we do not go over, we do not overcommit, and also lose out on some of the important priorities. The other governance structure that we are putting in place is the Investment Decision Board. Investment Decision Board, this is to make sure that funds that are earmarked for a project are actually spent on the project. The board will actually progressively commit funds to projects as the milestones are reached. So we do not have a situation where we budget one thing for a project and then the cost of the funds of course in a different direction. The third element of the governance structure is a technology advisory board, which is basically going to comprise of individuals, eminent individuals in industry, preferably retired CIOs, both from the public and private sector, to ensure that our plans and our strategies in terms of IT are actually in line with best practices, because the technology environment is changing so quickly, and I think the point has been made earlier that we need to understand technology and be able to manage it properly, or the cost can quickly get out of hand. So that, in brief, Chairperson, is our way forward on the firearms project. Thank you.
I get worried when I hear the way forward, especially around IT, because it's simply what it says is that every single other IT project in SAPS is not up to scratch. Basically what you're saying. Because none of those things were in place before. Okay, members, I'm opening up for questions. Can I ask members to be short and precise in their questions? And if you direct a question to a specific either the Department Auditor General or the Secretary to indicate as such. Honourable Molebatsi, Honourable Legetu, Honourable Sibia, Honourable Kulabanat in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank the presenter. My first question to the AG. Can you disclose the names of the five contracts audited but not mentioned in the report, and why were they not mentioned in the report? To the department, can you provide contracts where WAMAP is involved and the value of this contract? Now my second question is it better to repair vehicles or to purchase them? My third one is, do you have a turnaround strategy for the vehicles maintenance, like Nala and so on? My other question is, why is SAPS using consultants instead of their staff members? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Legetu.
Thanks. Let me thank the presentation. My first question will go to Civilian Secretariat. I had actually two questions here, but already you were rescued by Mr. Skete and Ngubane on the distinctions between the consultant and the service provider. He has promised to submit that back to us. The other question was on project management. Mr. Ngubane has talked about project management office. So my two concerns have been addressed. I want to talk to the skills transfer by the consultants that has failed. Plans are there to make sure that in the future this will definitely happen. Chair, lastly, I think that, yes, the last question will go to the Auditor General. When you present, you talked about 3 speedometers that were removed from vehicles. That to me is a bit serious. What has been done about that? Thanks.
Honourable Sibia, then Honourable Kulabanat, and then Honourable Groenewald.
Yes, Chairperson. Some questions are covered, but the Auditor General and the Secretariat, they are saying that there is no role being played by the internal audit, but according to the SAPS information, they do have an internal audit, but it seems as if they are not working together. I don't know if we can get a clarity from the audit. The Auditor General said that it is not an investigation, it's just an audit. But it seems as if we must have an investigation. Even the subs, they're supposed to tell us some are already arrested because it's a mess. I don't know who is failing to do this. So is it the management or is it one person who is playing the role here? I don't know. But supposed to be arrested. Thanks, Jefferson.
Honorable Kulabanat.
Definitely no resemblance. To the Auditor General, just to start, I didn't see in your report any reference to tenders as they were called initially. I wasn't sure where your audit point started. Was it with the tenders calling any objections, challenges to the tender awards? I just wanted to know if you'd started just at the beginning of the contract or looked at all before that. And I want to know why you chose this particular selection of contracts on the SAPS, and what tipped you off to look at those ones, and how many contracts there actually are that you had to choose from within the SAPs. And what consequences will those in charge of implementing and overseeing those contracts face? For example, I mean, we look at the firearm control system. I mean, it's an absolute disaster. It's supposed to be handed over in July 2006. I just couldn't believe what I was reading. Or do we wait for the SIU report? I'm not sure which of these contracts are being investigated by the SIU. Perhaps you could just fill us in there. And if there are, in fact, other contracts being investigated by the SIU that you did not audit, I'm quite keen to know that. And who on earth was responsible for underestimating the cost of Nyala refurbishment contract, 122% miscalculation? Would this bungle lie at the feet of the last police commissioner or the one before that, or who? I don't know. It just seems to me I'm seeing lots of action plans and lots of issues here, but I don't see anywhere the buck stops. Who is responsible? How are they going to be held to account? And that would run right the way through. I was a bit concerned when it seemed the Auditor General's office seemed to contradict itself, because you said you gained commitment from the Department of Police, but at the outset we were informed by you or your colleague that as a result of the audit were much the same as the result of a similar audit taken previously. It seems they hadn't implemented what you'd asked in the first place. So I actually would have been horrified and not saying you've gained commitment. You should have gained that the first time round. Please just explain that to me. To the Secretary of Police, your recommendations are really extensive. I would like to see what document exists that currently instructs SAPS members, or have you had to draw this up from scratch, telling SAPS members to do the very basics that we in fact, or I certainly would have presumed were common practice in the SAPS. I'm very concerned that a lot of what you've drawn up should be, and I've always presumed would be, standard practice. So I'm quite horrified to see these basics outlined by you. Is there such a document in existence at the moment? I mean, prior to your drawing this up. I've done that. That's covered by my colleagues. The last one is who would have taken the decision to hand 200 million rands worth of Nyalas to be refurbished to a small BEE company, which the claim is couldn't really do the work at the speed it was needed to be done. I don't know if the work was eventually completed, but it was stated by Scopa that delivery was very slow. So I don't know if, in fact, all the vehicles have been done by this company, which presumably, by the sound of it, was actually not able to complete the work timelessly. Who was responsible for the delay in delivering them to the contractors? That messed the whole system up. And has that work now been completed? Thank you.
Honourable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleague has asked quite a lot of questions, yes. I want to link up with it. And you know, Chairperson, this is not the first time when there's a problem in SAPS that we go here, that we're going to have this system, we'll control that system, we'll be managed by that system, and we'll be controlled by another system. It's one system, to the other manager, and it's a manager for the manager, and I don't know what everything. Now, I think it must stop, because it's quite simple, Chairperson, and I can take each one of these projects, but let's take the Nyala project. You disassemble Nyala bumper to bumper. You look at each and every part physically. You compile a basket for 48 components. You ask quotations. There must be a quotation on each and every one of those Nyalas. And still you can't calculate. I can't understand. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a specialist. But there's such a thing as common sense. How does common sense can't make a calculation with all those actions taken on Nyala? And then you're 122% out of your quotation.
And then the crucial question, Chairperson, has been asked by the Honourable Member Diana Kohler-Wagner. What actions did you take on a disciplinary level? Who was the project manager? Or is it a question, sorry, I didn't have the knowledge. We don't talk about millions anymore, we're talking about billions. It's totally unacceptable. I want to know what disciplinary steps have been taken to which members. And if not, why not? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Tilly and Honourable George.
I just want to understand when they spoke about no staff, so consultants were used. If just wondering if there is any outstanding vacancies, empty vacancies, why not hiring if there are any vacant vacancies, so that there should be staff to do the work instead of consultants? I was wondering if there is any quotations for hiring consultants and trainers. Do you use different consultants and trainers all the time, or? How many trainees have you trained within this financial year? Okay, about the speedometers, it has been asked. And then about the contractors that were put on hold, what is happening about that? On hold until when? Or what is happening? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable George.
Madam Chair, I'm going to repeat the question I asked last year to the auditor. You know, the auditors, they've got this nice word that we audit financial statements. Now, I'm asking this question because SAPS probably is exploiting that to the core. If you listen to this thing, the auditor says he has appealed to private sector, must not take advantage in the weaknesses of government. I said, I think that's a very good statement it's made in the pulpit. But the private sector is not going to do that. We know that. Because the benefit, why should, if I'm paid for doing work, why should I go and help them to make money? The question is, when is SAS, because we have heard this thing, when is SAS going to make sure that they develop the skills? If they are waiting for private sector to help them, surely I can tell you they're going to wait until the man is released from prison, because they are not going to get that. So this issue of transfer, the issue, what is that? Also linked to my question of your more financial statements being explained. Four addendums given gave rise to a total of two. So what SAS does, even if it follows proper procedure, a contract to SAS is meaningless. Because they can change, they call for tenders, then they can change it anytime. So that's why I'm saying there's another question, Madam Chair. And this question that starts saying now, we're going to teach our people to draft contracts. Again, surely my assumption is that SAS has got a legal department. I don't know where these lawyers of SAS study, where they have not been taught how to draft a contract. Now they must, I'm talking ordinary lawyers, normal lawyers, not from SAS. They know how to draft a contract. Why are these lawyers of SAS now going to be all of a sudden being trained to draft a contract? We've got a number of lawyers, there are many of them. Why should they all of a sudden they must be trained? learning from the past. That's what the good Auditor General. I'm asking you, do you think SARS is prepared to learn from the past? Because my observation is that SARS carries on doubt doing this thing. So you're preaching to the people who have taken a decision that we are not going to change. Because it's a normal thing. If you go through a process, you have got an assessment to learn from the past. Now they must be told by an Auditor General what they should be knowing. The Nyala, we are told, again, sometimes I get the impression that SARS take us, they regard us, I don't know, they think we don't understand. We might not be police, but surely we know what's happening in the world. If you say easy that we're to repair the 200 Nyala, one of the key questions is not to jump that we realize that it's expensive. You should have got a proper analysis. Why you couldn't buy it? Because now your price may creep. I don't know now. Because if you've got a vehicle that is damaged, or the first thing you check, how much is it going to cost to repair? Once you have realized that, then you say, how much is a new vehicle? Then on the basis of that, you can say, no, I will not be able to buy a new vehicle because it will not be cost effective. No, SARS does not do that. The Nyala price increase, that has been attended by police. The other thing, the amount you spend on ADA, because also you call for quotation, you then increase. But my question to you, Commissioner, how many police are functional illiterate? This is the question we've been asking, because by now, in my assumption, especially from 1996, we were appointing police on the basis that they have got matric. So now, why is this price of ADT? It should be going down. Because the number of police who are completely illiterate should be going down now. Because it should be the old police who were appointed before there was this introduction of appointing police with a matric certificate. But with you, it's increasing. It's probably another way of making sure that some friends, contractors, they must get some money. That's why I'm asking the question. I hope today we'll get the number. How many of these police we have in the police service? How many of them are illiterate? Thank you.
I also have a couple of questions that I want to ask. My first question is in regard to this Central Firearms Register contract, Waymar contract. Now, I take issue to the fact that it's said that 80% of it's completed, and I'm glad to see that you've actually involved the CSIR to do an assessment of that. I put it to you that less than 2% of it is functional. Less than 2% of that contract is functional. So I would like to have a definition from your understanding of 70% completed or 80% completed. I want a definition of what does that completion mean. Secondly, I put it to you that in terms of the Waymar contract, that you can't keep the system that is currently in place. Well, the lack of the system that is in place, even the 2%, because you do not have people in SAPS that can drive that process. Is it not true that with the original contract, there were 4 people that were supposed to be providing the support to that contract from CETA's side, and that you are currently left with 1? I hope you've registered the question of the member who asked what other contracts are Waymark involved in and what are the costs of those, because we know they are involved in other contracts, specifically in the building environment. We know that. We don't forget these things. We said to you before, Waymar is operating as a labor broker. So we want to know how many other contracts Are they, and what is the value of the other contracts that Waymark is involved in with INSAPS? And you've got to be specific around those. Is it not true, Commissioner Motiba, that you guys were still using the old firearm system? The one prior to the new legislation. We'd also like to know from the department. Auditor General Office, you refer to the role of the bid adjudication committee, and you say that some of these things went through the bid adjudication committee and they've given permission for it. We've got problems with the bid adjudication committee in SAPS, and SAPS knows that. Because the bid adjudication committee in many instances, in other consultants' reports and other contracts, have been problematic. For instance, we've raised the issue a few years back. Commissioner Kluze was there, where we said we checked the telephone numbers of service providers, of SAPS. And it's different names and addresses, but it's the same telephone number. We've checked it. We're not the police. We do it as we prepare for meetings. We've checked and we see it's the same service provider, different names, bidding against each other. We also have raised in this committee previously other problems around the bid adjudication committee. Interests. We've raised issues of people on the bid adjudication committee who has been part of designing the need, evaluating the contract, and then give the contract, awarding the contract. So have those problems been solved? Can look us in the eye today and you can tell us, because really with all due respect to the Auditor General's office, if they say to us that the bid adjudication committee has okayed that and therefore according to the PFMA there is no problem, we say we still have a problem. Because the bid adjudication committee is a problem. Have those problems been resolved? Do we now have a bid adjudication committee that is honest, that is not awarding contracts for kickback or to friends? The issue of the Nyalas. You know, the Nyalas issue for me is amazing. One of the reasons that you use as an excuse of why this happened is that the Nyalas were imported and purchased before 1994. Now, listen carefully to this. And were that not well understood by SAPS?
What?
After 15 years, you said to us, most of them were older than 15 years. How did you upkeep those before this refurbishment of the Nyalas? How were they maintained? Was the purchase of it, did it not come with a contract of maintenance? And can I raise a second problem around the Nyalas? After you've explained to us how it's possible for something that's 15 years old that has been functioning, then it was put in a garage somewhere or storage somewhere, but now suddenly we don't understand it. Let's write another problem around the Nyalas. The Nyalas, you have then took the decision that it's more cost effective to refurbish the Nyalas. Now you come to us and you've given us two presentations, two different set of presentations. The first one looked different than the one that you gave us today. In one of those sets of presentations, I read all my documents so I pick up on these differences. In one of those, it is mentioned that you are now considering replacing the Nyalas. So where does the economic sense come in now? Now we've spent all of these millions of rands, of which a lot of them were not delivered on time in any case. And now we'd say, 3 years later, not even 3 years later, we're going to replace the Nyalas. Based on what? Where's the research that was done? Where's the economic? I don't have a problem that you replace them. Why didn't you take that decision 3 years ago when you should have taken that decision? Most probably they cost even more now than they would have at that point in time. And I do think that our circumstances have changed and that the people who is in charge of public order needs proper vehicles for that. But it's these silos within SAPS. Nobody ever takes responsibility for anything, we just pass it on. We've got a group of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 generals here. To come and explain a mess. An absolute mess. Third issue around the Nyalas. Now, also in one of the presentations or in the Auditor General's report, I can't remember where it says the Auditor General writes as well, that you've got now the AVL system that is going to alert you to when they need to come in for service. What happened to the AVL contract? Because we are very well aware of it. Again, we don't forget that the AVL contract has expired, that you allowed it to lapse, then you re-signed the contract after lapsing, which means it's now an illegal contract. What happened to the AVL contract? Even though it's not on here, but you provide that to us as one of your solutions. So let us understand what happened. Commissioner Mfumi, you will remember that we've raised this issue about this contract that has expired. And SAPS think we don't know about it, and then 2 months or 3 months after it expires, then you sign off on it again, not realizing that it's been an illegal contract. I'm also worried about, in all of the explanations that we've received, other than that of the Secretary of Police, even though it was the issue that was raised by this committee over and over again, raised by the Auditor General, not the first time, none of you spoke about the involvement of legal services in the contracts.
Yeah.
None of you.
That's a question I want to raise.
Exception of the Secretary of Police and the Auditor General. From such a side, as the Honourable George said, you're now going to train people on contracts. You don't need to train people. You need people that are there already that can read the contract. But again, it doesn't come in a comprehensive, this is our solution, how we go forward with it. You know the problem with SAPS is, last week you arrived here, after we had to force you to come here. You tell us that a bill will cost SAPS nothing to implement. After we force you to go and apply your minds, it then comes to almost 2 million rand that the bill will cost SAPS. It's because 2 million rand has become like 2 rand in the police service. And we can't allow that. This parliament, by next year, would be able, in fact by this year, we will be able to change budgets. You're tendering for a change of the budget. You're really asking for a change of the budget. Because you're not respecting the fact that you're not dealing with your own money. You're not respecting the fact that the money that is there is not yours, it's the taxpayers' money. Consequences, members have raised that. Can you also, when you speak about Nyalas, Commissioner Kruse, can you also indicate to us the replacement? What are we talking about? What is the cost involved in this? We will, Honourable Ndlova, I'll allow you a question and then we'll allow them to respond.
No, mine, Chairperson, are just two of them. The first one is that how do you sign the contract? How do you agree with a contract without a written agreement? Where does the negotiating goes to? If you are just agreeing without signing anything, what is the two parties agreed on if there is no contract written? The second one I had General Ngwane saying that the contract has been terminated. But thereafter he said that they have requested the state law advisor to advise them. You see, they've already terminated the agreement. And then they went to ask the state law advisor to advise them if it is right to terminate the contract. It's a vice versa. It says that on your page 16 on your presentation. and we are still waiting for the senior counsel to give you the advice. But the contract has already been terminated. What will happen if the signing of contract of the getting away of that contract is illegal? What will happen? You will go back to the contract again. What will happen? Those are the two questions, Chairperson. But I think let us be fair to each other here, because we tend to be playing this game now of not understanding what we are dealing with. We may not be professional in dealing these things, but we can read and write. We understand when we are talking about factual things and non-factual things. There are things that can be factually be pointed out here that it can't be done like this. It is wrong. It is totally wrong. And you can't keep on telling us one the same thing, because that leads us to say the report is not correct. Thank you.
I'm going to allow you to answer. Can you also, while you're answering, even though it's not on the agenda, tell us what's the situation with Tetra? Also, an issue that this committee raised, this committee, and you were defending that issue to the death. Can you give us an indication what's the situation with Tetra? You can answer, please.
Chairperson, thank you. I will talk to the question of the contract. And I have taken note of what the chairperson is saying, that the BAC is dishonest, and kickbacks and all that. But with regards to the signing and extension of contracts, what has happened is that we have the head of...
Mr. Committee, careful now. Stop a moment, please. I said this committee has raised problems with the bid adjudication committee before. I ask whether you have addressed those problems. Do not go back, running back, and telling the National Commission that this committee said the Bid Adjudication Committee is dishonest. You know as well as we know that there have been problems with Bid Adjudication Committee before. Please.
Chair, I don't believe you used the word kickbacks at all.
I did.
No, Honourable Chairperson, what I was indicating is that, okay, I was going to say it last, but let me say it now. With regards to the members of the BAC, what we do is that we all the members are vetted, and we continuously make sure that no member serves on the BAC after the vetting has expired. And then before the vetting can expire, we start to put an application for the vetting. So that's what I wanted to indicate, Chairperson, in terms of the individuals who are on the bid adjudication committee. Then regarding the contracts themselves, I just wanted to indicate that the head of ISM at that time had a delegation. She had powers delegated to her, or whoever would have been the head, to enter into contracts and to negotiate contracts on behalf of the police. But that has subsequently been withdrawn within the environment of IT. But we have withdrawn that delegation. The Divisional Commissioner of Technology Management Services has got the same delegation like all other Divisional Commissioners. And all the Divisional Commissioners and Provincial Commissioners, if they have got contracts that are in place, contracts are put in place through the process of supply chain management, and if there is a need to make a variation or to extend the contract, now they apply to the bid adjudication committee for consideration, and we always make sure that we are in line with the National Treasury instruction of not extending beyond the 15% of the contract, the original contract price. Honourable Chairperson. So regarding the other questions, I will request my colleagues as well to respond.
Before you step off there, have you addressed the problem of the Bid Adjudication Committee existing out of the same person who has designed the need, the same person who has evaluated the contract, the same person then giving the contract? Please, that's the question.
Thanks, Chair. I will address the issue. Chair, there's two processes. One is the BAC, which makes the final adjudication. The issue of prior adjudication, first is the specification process, which comes normally out of the...
Mr. De Cruz, I'm going to stop you. We know that. But we also know we've got examples of it, that same people sat on the bid adjudication committee. We can give you examples of it. We're asking whether it's been sorted out.
I'm trying to explain that, Chair. Because with the challenges we have, I think, is around what you are speaking about. We picked up mainly before they reached the bid adjudicating committee. With the end user, I give you an example, forensics. They would draw up the specifications for that bid itself. So before it comes to supply chain. What we have said now, the specification process must start within supply chain itself, around that. We're also going to ensure, and the NAS Committee has given us instructions, that we bring in expertise like CSR or independent people to be consultants in that process, as we would call it, to ensure that the specifications are neutral and not biased towards a certain company, which we picked up when it comes from certain environments. So we're putting into place a process where we will manage the whole process of specifications. The other thing where we think we have challenges is around the BEC, where I think the issue of manipulation is higher than at the bid commission. And we're putting now a process itself where the bids will be received by a specific general not related to those bids and not by administration. He will then sign over checklist, for instance, you would say, we find out they will draw people's tax clearance, right? We just qualify it. So there's a checklist. We then seal the bag in an evidence bag, which will only be opened by the chairperson, which I appoint for the bid adjudication committee. So he will see that no document could have been removed in the administration process from receiving the bid till the BEC. So we're putting in place a process now to deal with some of the challenges you put yourself. By the time it runs the bid, none of the bid committee members may participate in any of the specification processes. Neither may they sit in the BAC where we score points in terms of the 90-10 or 80-20 principle. So the bid committee does the final adjudication without being part of the previous process itself. So we try to separate the issues to ensure that we have better compliance around those issues.
Commissioner, that's the question that was asked. All you had to say was, yes, we have addressed it, because there was a problem. Yes, we have addressed it, because you know as well as I know that there's been the same people evaluating sitting on the bid adjudication committee. What you're telling us now is in future it will not happen. You put a process in place, correct?
It's not happening now.
Future?
No, it will not happen because of the processes. Okay, let me go on to the issues of the Nyanas. In terms of the company which was appointed, they were appointed in terms of the preferred preferential act in terms of government procurement policy itself. And there was a decision whether the bid committee awarded that we need to empower small disadvantaged companies, and therefore 20% of the bid was given to that small company, which we see we did have challenges in terms of them completing their work. Eventually they did complete the work, but was not in time in terms of that. I think I want to explain the basket, because I think there seems to be a misunderstanding in terms of the basket. We had a choice at the beginning of this process to either do what we call strip and quote, where you give someone the vehicle, he strips the vehicle, and then you have to pay him for stripping the vehicle, and then he quotes you for the price of fixing it. We said, no, that might work out too expensive, because we would not know what's wrong. We then decided to do an estimate of what it would cost. And that's where we came to the 48 items, which we think would possibly be wrong before we went out on tender. So we didn't know what would be wrong with a vehicle before. We estimated these would be the main things that would possibly go wrong with the vehicle because they were standing still. We spoke to our mechanics and they drew up that for us to make the assessment. So that assessment of the value was based on prior the tender. Once we made that value, we then went on the tender based on that value itself. The tender was awarded on that value. After the tender was awarded, every vehicle was then stripped in the presence of a qualified mechanic of SAPS, and they noted whichever part was required in terms of that pricing list of the 48. And what has happened, always our expectation in terms of estimates was lower than what they expected. There were more things wrong with the vehicle than what we anticipated because the vehicles were standing itself. So that was not a calculating afterwards. Once the mechanic certified those things were incorrect with the car, they brought it back to the bid committee around the quotation process. That was then approved after the certification with the mechanic that the following things are missing and need to be repaired on the vehicle. So every vehicle was individually checked by a mechanic. And I think, we could have done our basket better, but the pricing then, but we got value for money from every vehicle that we repaired itself around those issues, just to explain the basket itself. There was a number of issues, let me just get to the point.
Why was it seen to be unknown, foreign to the ACPs? That was one of the questions.
Well, the Nellas were used in the late 80s, early 90s. In 94, there was a decision by management to not use Nellas because they are very aggressive military-type vehicle itself. And therefore, they were removed because the police wanted more community-friendly vehicles in terms of the new approach towards policing. Therefore, there was no expertise on those because they were parked since then. At the time when the decision was made and intelligence was telling us around the issue of the World Cup and unrest was coming up, I think, in Mpumalanga, as we got the reports at management, a decision was made that we needed armored vehicles to police those events. We then did a cost comparison in terms of what does it cost, and that's where we came up with the basket, what does it cost to repair vehicles, and we came to the 79 million we can. The cost of a new vehicle then was in the region of 4.5 to 5 million, which would have been over R1 billion to buy 20 new vehicles. So we had to work out whether we're going to spend R1 billion to buy new vehicles, besides in terms of time and in terms of the procurement process, those would not be ready with the market. So we decided to spend 79 million instead of over R1 billion to use vehicles for the World Cup itself. So that was the reason why we chose that route around the issue itself. The issue of replacements of the vehicles presently, Division ORS has put in a proposal that these vehicles are very expensive to keep on the road. They're very heavy, they're military vehicles. They're not fit for use in terms of present climate. We will continue to use them, but we appointed a committee where we're going to bring in outside consultants to develop a purpose-built vehicle for the issue of our present state of things. So we have started that process of assembly committee where we'll do the cost comparisons, we'll do the analysis in terms of what the future requirements are there. We will then decide the process of tendering once we have come to that decision itself.
I'm sorry, as I recall, we were told they were not used from 94 because there was no need. Then there was a need, so they were brought back into action. Now we're being told, actually, they're no good for action. I was in a SAPS mechanic place at Isipingo a few days ago, and they said all they're doing is repainting them a different color to make them acceptable. I'm not sure are we using them, not using them, trashing them, refurbishing them, or what is it we're actually doing with them? Because to spend that kind of money only to tell us you're designing something else seems a bit of a waste.
Chair, the vehicles are being utilized at all the unrest situations in the country at the moment. What I'm saying, at the same time, while we're using it, their costs are very high in terms of people. They're heavy. They were made for, in the old days when we had heavy unrest in this country for people shooting with AKs at the police and all those sort of things. The operational people see they need better troop carriers, which will be cost-effective to move faster. That vehicle can't move very fast. It only can be in the area. So we will continue to use the vehicle, and in very high-risk areas, we will continue to use them. But the operational environment saying we need to start looking in terms of the future of what is better placed in terms of the present state, in terms of modern policing. So while we'll continue to use them, and they will continue to be used either, if the president goes to a dangerous area where neither we take the Nyala, where a minister is in danger, we put him in the Nyala because it's very secure. But for moving troops around in terms of the thing, they're not the ideal vehicle because it's a military vehicle, not a civilian vehicle. So yes, we are using them, but we are putting the process in place of saying in the future. So we don't wait till we reach that stage again we did in 2010. We're starting the planning process now so that in future when we know whatever vehicle we need in the future. AVL, right.
bit short, please.
The AVL contract, Chair, as you correctly said, it had expired by the 28th of June of the month, and the renewal was signed 2 days later on the 30th of June. So we got indication from our legal services that the contract is therefore not valid. We subsequently got a second opinion. We said the intent was actually to renew the contract from the first of, now the contract was valid until the end of the month, and the new contract was starting on the 1st of July. So we had those two opinions that were in conflict, with the internal opinion and an external opinion. So we are waiting for a third opinion from the senior counsel to basically help us to move forward. What we have done in the process, because we needed the AVL to be running, the provincial commissioners were actually raising a lot of concerns about not knowing where their vehicles are. So we said to the contractor, while there's this legal opinion awaited, let us continue with the work, except that we will not install any new units on the new vehicles. So for this financial year, there has been no new vehicle-mounted units installed. We are just continuing with the maintenance to ensure that we can track the vehicles for now. We are also putting together, we have a specification for a new tender that has been prepared. We are going to be publishing the tender in the next week or so.
You come here and you tell us one of your solutions in terms of the vehicle management and in terms of the Nyawalos is the AVL and the early warning system that comes with it. So actually, you window dressing. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to address a few questions that were more specific to the TMS environment. One of the questions was, why are we using consultants? And maybe linked to that was the issue of the skills transfer by the consultants. What are we going to do in future to ensure that there is skills transfer? As well as there was a question on the vacancies. If we have vacancies, why are we not using permanent staff? Let me handle those three first of all. Chair, as I said earlier, we picked up on the point when you said if this WEMA contract is a mess, it means all the other projects are also a mess. And I must agree with you, we do have a mess. I don't want to beat up on the bush there. We do have a mess situation that we are we are dealing with. Obviously, we are not going to solve all the problems in one day. We have to take a phased approach. On this skill, on the consultants, when CETA was established, it was really to address the issue of skills availability in government in general, because we do not we cannot pay the highly skilled people enough to keep them in government. We were training people, and as soon as they're trained, we lose them to the private sector because they attract better salaries. So then came the issue of establishing CETA to close that gap. So with CETA being in place, we have the same problem because CETA employed people permanently and their salaries were going up. Meanwhile, the work that they were providing was still the same, the scope of work was still the same. So we find that the costs are really going out of hand. So for projects that are specific, we decided to get consultants in for a period of time with the view that once the project is done, we can let them go. So that is by and large the principle. Even now, in the IT environment particularly, we have very, very highly skilled people that we cannot keep. We can bring them in for a period of time, have them work on the project, and the skills transfer, again, that has not been done effectively. because we need to bring our people up to speed. The WEMAC contract in particular, we did not put a team together there to learn from the WEMAC people. We only did that towards the end of from 2008. We now have internal people who do understand the technology platform and who understand the requirements, the user requirements. But in general, I must say that the filling of the vacancies, we have to get in entry-level people. We want to start a program where we get students from technicons and universities that can come in on an internship level and be able to at least spend a two-year period where we train them in various aspects and be able to utilize their services. But this is going to be a revolving wheel, because once they are fully trained, we will not be able to keep them.
Could you wrap up on those questions, please, because there are specific questions regarding the WEMAC contract and the other contracts that still needs to be answered.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The use of addendums, that was another question. We have taken a decision. In fact, the National Commissioner has instructed that we do not use addendums. If we cannot claim the contract up front, then it means we do not do that contract, because the use of addendums means we do not plan the project properly up front. So as a principle, we will not be using addendums going forward. The firearms control contract, the Chair wanted to know what is the definition of 80%. Chair, in the software development environment, it's very hard to say exactly 80% has been done and so on. All we can say is, in terms of functionality, how much do we think we have covered the whole requirement? So I cannot say for sure it's 80%. This is why we want to get an independent party to give us that opinion. But I have to say that from my perspective, we have covered the requirements. At least more than 50% of the requirements are covered. That much I can say. However, to say what exactly has been done and what needs to be done to complete the project, we are going to be led by the CSIR. How many other contracts is WEMAC involved in, and what is their value? Chair, I would have to defer to my colleagues, because I am not aware of any other contracts that WEMAC is involved in right now.
Can somebody else indicate?
No, Honorable Chairperson, we do not know. Can I request that we go back and we find out and then we'll respond to that? Especially because you indicated not only in the chairman's environment, but also within the building environment, Honorable Chairperson.
Just check your notes on the building environment. WEMAC is involved in that as well. Subcontracting. Go and have a look. It's with the special investigative unit. From the information that we've given to them. So just go and take a look. We will give you a week, and thanks to some of your colleagues, that week will not be extended. So by next Tuesday, we need to have an answer.
There was a question on whether or not we are still using the old firearms registry system. Yes, Chair, we are using it. In fact, we are doing continual enhancements to it. I think what is important is to understand that the firearms registry system is a mainframe-based system, which means there is a limitation on the technology. For instance, we cannot... The website of the project, where we enable... firearms dealers and manufacturers to automatically log their stock on the system. This we could not do via the old system. We would have to build an interface for that. But the system is functional. We are keeping it alive, basically, waiting to have the firearms control system in place.
We've spent 600 and something million rand on nothing. So far. Continue.
the AVL contract, I think I've addressed that one. There was a question of why consult the stakeholder advisor after counseling.
If I may, just give me a name here. Could you tell me who it was you forgot to sign off the new contract? A name.
Work through the chairperson, please. This is not a free fall.
Beg your pardon, I thought you had recognized me.
Continue, please.
I missed the question. Who forgot?
The member wants to know whether you've got a name for who does not sign in time in terms of the AVL contract. It comes back to the issue of consequences.
The contract was signed by the then National Commissioner 2 days after the expiry. It was signed on the 30th of June 2009. After it had expired. The question on whether we consulted the state law advisor after cancelling the contract, I said that we consulted the state law advisor before we terminated the service, but WEMAC was on site and they were expecting payment every month. So we decided that while we have this, we're waiting for the opinion, let us terminate the services of WEMAC. In other words, let's move them out of sight because we cannot continue to pay them when there is no valid contract, in our opinion. So we are waiting for that legal opinion, but we did not do it after the fact. It was actually done before we terminated the service. There was a question on Tetra. What is happening in Tetra? I think I can give you an update on that one, Chairperson. Let me start with the Eastern Cape project. We have taken stock of that project. It's been a difficult project, as I think the committee is well aware. We have basically, the contract is expiring in December this year. So what we have instructed the team to do, the company, is to say, let us complete phase one and phase two, which is almost complete anyway. The switch in Port Elizabeth will cover phase one of the project, and the East London switch will cover phase two. Now, all that equipment has been delivered. We have it with us. We just needed to do two more high sides between East London and Port Elizabeth. Around Grahamstown, we need the high side so that there will be connectivity. The other logistical issue is that you cannot commission the one switch without the other. They've got to be commissioned simultaneously so that they can be synchronized. So that was the holdup. The other issue that we wanted to clear, first of all with the company, was the issue of phase approach in order to deploy the system.
I'm going to stop you. Tetra, we will call you for a proper briefing on Tetra because it's not simplistic as that. Tetra was supposed to be rolled out throughout the country, so we can't only focus on the Eastern Cape. If it's not going to be rolled out throughout the country, it means R1 billion has been thrown into the water. That's what it means. So we will call you on Tetra specifically. Simple as that. And as far as I understand the decision, and in fact, I believe the Commissioner said at the end of last year, you're reconsidering whether Tetra should be rolled out to the rest of the country. So we will call you specifically on Tetra. Can we continue with the other questions, please?
That's all from my side, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The APET is not only for police act members, to be honest. Is for all sub-employees. So in the 2010-2011, we had about 255 police members across the country who were attending this program. But it's not a one-off thing. We have got about six subjects or six learning areas before one can finish APET. You need 120 credits. So you don't attend APET for 1 year, and then you pass, and then it's finished, you are done with APET. There are learning areas, numeracy, literacy, Level 1, 2, and 3, you have got fundamentals, you have got electives. So before you complete GETC, which is a general education and training certificate, or NQF level 1, you should have acquired 120 credits at least. So it's not only for Police Act members, it's for everybody.
You're not answering the member's question. You will also have a week to give the written answer to the member's question. The member's question was how many members of the police service, whether it's SAPS members or whether it's DPSA members, still need to undergo ABEC training.
This year we have 114.
Sorry, I'm still on the floor. So switch off your microphone. You will give in writing where we are, which ones must still go through which phases, and how many must still do it from afresh by next week Tuesday.
Thank you, Chair.
63.
Yeah, just quickly on a few issues. I think the issue that was raised by Honourable Member Sikato about the skills transfer. I think what we're saying is that people need to be made, the right people need to be made available. The skills transfer needs to be upfront at the beginning in the contract, in part of the planning process. And then the right people need to be made available for that. So I think that's what we're saying about the skills transfer. With regard to Honourable Member Sabir's question about internal audit, I think what we're saying is that when it comes to this consultancy issue, internal audits already exist in SAPS. And in fact they have been strengthened quite significantly in the last year in terms of the role that internal audit needs to be playing. I think that I can't speak for the Auditor General, but what we're saying is that the internal audit within SAPS must play a much more interface role with the whole issue of consultants and the monitoring process. We don't want to be monitoring the technicalities of contracts, etc. That should be done by internal audit in SAPS, and I think that's what we're arguing. Not that they don't exist, but that they exist, but they need to play a greater role with regard to consultants. With regard to the question by Honourable Member Colbarnard, I think that what is being investigated by the SIU, etc. There was a proclamation that was passed some time ago. Now, some of these contracts fall directly within that proclamation that the President signed. And the meeting that took place was a joint meeting between the DPCI and the SIU, because we need to understand that the SIU doesn't criminally prosecute people. So it needs to be a joint investigation by the two so that the Hawks can prosecute people criminally and SIU can look at the investigation, recommendations, and recuperation of funds. Now, what we've asked the SIU to do is to say, of the Auditor General's report, and that DPCI team, of the Auditor General's report, give us an idea of what falls outside that proclamation, so that we can then look at, but it would appear from the meeting that we had with the SIU and DPCI, and I think some of the SAPS members were present, that most of these cases actually fall within that general proclamation. I think Vinales is possibly the one that doesn't, but I think the issues that the AG raised with us were actually around Waymark, etc., that need to be thoroughly investigated. So that's what's happening with the SIU DPCI. With regard to some of the things, I think what we're saying is that we want to see all the systems being properly put in place. We're aware that, for example, internal audit, as I said earlier, has been strengthened, particularly since the appointment of the new National Commissioner. She's looked at internal control mechanisms in SAPS, inspectorate and internal audit. They already are in place in SAPS. What we want to do is to get them to play more of a role in this regard. I think Head of Technology Management Services has also spoken about some of the processes they've involved in with experts, etc. I think what we're saying is they're bits and pieces of some of the recommendations we're making in place, but they need to be brought together into a system which is an end-to-end process which will allow proper monitoring of tenants and consultants. I think that, I mean, just on the legal field, I hear exactly what Honourable Member George is saying, but I think what we also need to recognise in legal services is that law is becoming a highly specialised field. So just because you can draft legislation or you can understand deal with criminal issues in SAPS, contract law is becoming increasingly specialized. So if you go to a legal firm of criminal lawyers and ask them to draft a contract, they're going to say to you, no, go to somebody else, we're not contract experts. And I think what we need to look at is, within the legal services of fact, do we have all those different specialities, or are we kind of jacks of all trade, and then as a result our contracts become quite weak? So I think that's just the point I wanted to raise in terms of what was said about the legal field.
I think you've covered this, because the fact of the matter is legal services are not involved. Even if it's just reading through a contract, that's the point that we've made over the years all along, is that such legal services are not involved in checking the contract. It comes from the supplier, such whoever signs off on it, and thereafter we realize what the consequences are. So, but we'll make a ruling around these things at the end. Auditor General's Office, from your side.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to respond to the questions that were posed to us as briefly as I can. I will defer two questions to my colleague Krishna, who's just sitting on my right here, to answer. Chair, with respect to the question on the contracts, yes, in the presentation that we presented to the members today, there are 9 contracts listed. The 9 contracts, the last 2 of them, there were no material findings and hence were not included in the public report. The other 7 have been included in the public report and have been split into the 4 areas. Some of those areas, more than one contract related to it. So the 7 contracts relate to the 4 areas as reported in the report. And all the names have been disclosed to the portfolio committee, to Parliament. With respect to the question on the commitments that we got and that we reflected in the presentation, those relate and should be taken in the context of this audit. There are specifically responses that we got as an office in relation to the audit work that we had conducted during this session. With respect to the member's question or comment around the reports of the Auditor General on financial statements, yes, the member is correct in that we expressed an audit opinion on the financial statements as to whether they are free from material misstatement, whether they are fair reflection of the financial activities of the department and whether compliance with laws and regulations. However, our annual work that we do, our annual general report, does also talk to aspects of clean administration as well. And if you look through our general reports, you will see that we go through great length to talk about issues of internal controls and governance, supply chain management practices, IT problems, human resource issues, financial health, irregular and possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as well as issues of compliance. They may not be packaged in the way in which you are seeing this performance audit, but we do touch on elements of that every year. And indeed, the office is increasing the amount of resources we divert now to value for money audits, such as the one that you're seeing in front of you. With respect to the skills transfer from the private sector, I think this has been touched on. Our experience in this space has shown that if it is set out when you embark in the contract, as has been said, many, if not most, of the service providers will provide the ability for them to skill up and transfer skills. Our experience has shown in many cases it doesn't happen because it's not planned and thought through at the onset. As I said initially in the presentation, skills transfer doesn't happen. It needs to be planned and managed, and hence we feel strongly that it can work. With respect to the question of can SAPs learn from the past, yes, we certainly believe so. And we certainly believe that the recommendations that we've made in the report are achievable. But if there is a genuine intent to realize them and to realize value for money, we truly feel that they are achievable and within reach. The two questions related to, I think they were more technical in nature. I'll just ask Krishna to talk about related to these pedometers and some of the aspects around how we looked at the contracts in respect of tenders. Krishna.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Firstly, in respect of the 3 odometer pedometers that were exchanged, those were specific odometers that were exchanged with second-hand odometers, and the readings were not recorded at that stage. So at the end of the day, the auditors could not determine what was the reading, firstly when it was refurbished, and secondly whether the Nyala then travelled for more than 5,000 kilometres to see whether the services took place as it should have. So hopefully that will clarify that. Then the second one was a number of questions, so I'm going to go through it. If there's something that I missed, please just stop me. I think firstly the process that we followed, once the departments have been identified for audit, we go into the department and we obtain knowledge of the business. We work through minutes of top management meetings, we have meetings with top and senior management, we analyze accounting data, we see what is out in the media, then we identify a first set of contractors. And we in access identified 50 contractors, C0, that we said, okay, there are some possible scope for work, where we then go further and do preliminary work to identify risks containing these certain projects. And from there, we identified the 9 contracts where we felt there's sufficient scope for audit. And from there, we went into the specific audit process. I don't know if that's sufficient in answering the question. In terms of how many contracts there currently are within SAT, I will have to go back. I don't think Arafayeda will be able to answer the committee on that one. Then in terms of the consequences for not monitoring, that question should be posed to the department. I should be able to answer that specific question. And I think that is all from my side. Thank you, Honourable Chair members.
Anything else from the Department Secretary? And then I'm summarising the meeting. I think we all realise, and the Department should know, that this committee actually takes the contracts that you enter into quite seriously because of the mess that has been there before. And I think one needs to understand that you seriously have a problem if 500 and how many days afterwards? 39 days after a request for laptops have been put in by internal audit for the skills transfer, it arrives. Then you've got a problem. Then there's a problem that needs to be addressed. And the committee will do the following. We are giving you until Tuesday for the report on ABED and the report on other contracts that Waymark is involved in, even as subcontractors. Go and check it. Then we want a full report in writing on the TETRA issue. And that is also by next week, Tuesday. Well, given that we are in going into a public holiday, let's extend it until next week Friday for all of these things. Next week Friday, it must be with the committee secretary for all of this. Secretary and department, it's fine, they must all send it, which means they must send it by Thursday if it's Good Friday next Friday. Secretary and the department, I refer you to page 12 and 13 and 14. Of the Auditor General's presentation. Without asking for it again, we are going to expect progress reports on the quarterly things that the Auditor General's office have indicated that must be reported to the Portfolio Committee on a quarterly basis, on all of these aspects. It's already worrying that if you look at the NAOLA contract, that already some of the vehicles are not being service as per the guarantee. So clearly we're running into the same problems yet again. So we are going to expect, and I'm saying this specifically to the department because it's not the secretary's job to make sure that the department comply to it, but you've got an oversight function as well, is that quarterly, Commissioner Schutte, as we call for the quarter financial reports, we would expect progress on the implementation, on the corrections of these measures. Where are we? What have we done, etc.? Commissioner Kruger, I think you do have to, you will owe this committee, whether we do it during the budget period, that is fine, but a clarity in terms of what are we doing to replace Nyalas, what is the final decision, where are we going in terms of that. Public order, public protests have become more violent in the past few years. It's not going to ease up soon, and we also need to make sure that those police officers who are responsible for that do have the necessary tools of the trade. Commissioner Mufumi, how many contracts have SAPS got? We want a list of those contracts. The value of those contracts, the starting dates, the end dates, and the service providers. And I think to be fair to you, you'd need more than a week to comply that, file that for us. I would think you'd need less than a week, but I'll give you more than a week to compile it. So where are we now, members? The first Friday in April, please. Yeah, first Friday in April. We need to have that. And we will keep an eye on those. And we will be asking questions continuously around those. Members, we are supposed to be adopting minutes. I'm not going to do that now. We can do it in the strat plan. It's going to take us 10 minutes. We can adopt the minutes there. We've already run over time. Thank you very much for members for your attendance. Thank you to the department, the Auditor General's Office, the Secretary of Police for the briefing that you've given us. We will be in contact with the Auditor General's Office, and we will, as in the past, raise issues if we pick up on some things that is disturbing to us. Like you could see today, the Tetra contract is of a concern to us. Thank you very much, members. Meeting is adjourned.